desert and the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening, good morning, as the case may be, across all these many, many time zones in the west, from the Tahitian and Hawaiian island chains eastward all the way into the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to the pole, and worldwide, global, on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. Great to be here. Next hour, we are going to have SciTech's Major Ed Dames, a technical remote viewer. And I'll tell you a little bit of what's coming. Not that I really know. You see, Ed called, late last week, I think, and said, Art, I've got it. I've actually got what I've been unable to figure out. In other words, there was a point past which remote viewers apparently are unable to see. And Ed, for lack of a better phrase, and it's a pretty good one actually, chose discontinuity, the great discontinuity, he calls it. And he knows what it is. And I said, wow, all right, well, here we go. We'll do a program. Major Ed Dames was a part of the actual U.S. government-backed, funded remote viewing program, which went on for many years in the U.S. With many millions of dollars of your tax dollars spent, and has now started SciTech, which is a private organization. And he said, Art, do you want to know what it is? And I thought for a second, and I said, no, I don't. I want to find out when everybody else finds out. So, that is exactly what's going to occur. I will find out when you find out. I don't know. What do you think it might be? I thought I would ask you in this hour prior to his appearance what you think this discontinuity is. Some sort of religious event? Possibly. Some sort of a catastrophe? Always possible. Some sort of earth change? Definite possibility. I've been kind of rolling them over in my mind what it might be, but I really don't know. Ed asked me if I wanted to know, and I said, no, better not to. The big story is Defense Secretary William Cohen said today that Iraq has apparently been able to maintain enough chemical and biological weaponry to, quote, kill every man, woman, and child on the face of the earth, end quote. And, of course, we believe they have it hidden away, probably in one of Saddam's personal enclaves, castles, homes, whatever it is. He's apparently got somewhere between 20 and 200 tons of VX. That's V as in Victor, X as in X-ray, a lethal nerve agent. And about 6,000 gallons of anthrax. So, I guess we are going to force a confrontation. It looks as though the UN inspectors are going to demand to go to the 60-plus-odd sites that Iraq has declared to be off-limits, where, of course, is exactly where they have hidden all of this deadly stuff. And the Iraqis are going to say no. The UN inspectors, I'm drawing this out for you, the UN inspectors are going to leave Iraq in protest, and then the smart and dumb bombs will begin to fall, and cruise. So I think that's probably what's going to happen. I think we were horrendously disappointed when Iraq appeared to cave in to all demands and allow the UN inspectors back in, they said at that time, carte blanche. Of course, they're not giving it. And so now I really think that this is going to come to a head, and my guess would be the next 7 to 10 days. When you see the UN inspectors leave or get the big boot from Iraq in a puff, one way or the other, you will know you are then just days, two or three in all probability, away from a strike. And they're saying it will not be a pinprick, meaning we're going to hit them hard. And all I can say is, if we really are going to do this, then let us finally do it right, and kill that SOB. I know that we've got awfully good intelligence. And so, frankly, I hope that's what they're planning. They would never say so because, of course, officially we never target a head of state. But if a smart or dumb bomb should happen to fall where he is located, why, you know how that goes. An ecological group in Chile, this is, by the way, from Reuters, is sounding an alarm about 2-foot-long mutant rats. That's right, mutant rats that have attacked barnyard animals in a suburb of Santiago in Chile. How would you like to meet up with a 2-foot rat? Now, they don't exactly understand why these rats have grown so large and have mutated, but they speculate they've fed on the droppings of hormone-fattened poultry. Hormone-fattened poultry. And I saw a long story earlier today about antibiotics that are given now as a regular thing to chickens, and that that antibiotic then is passed on to human beings, and it is contributing to a general resistance. And I'm using a milder word here because there are completely resistant strains of stuff, little guys that are beginning to build, which I consider clearly to be part of the quickening. President Clinton is a believer that there may indeed be UFOs, according to a Little Rock associate. Check this out. When he appointed his friend Webster Hubble to a job in the Justice Department, he told him he wanted to go through government records and find out if UFOs existed. This is from the Daily Telegraph, by the way. He also, of course, wanted to know who really assassinated President John Kennedy. The startling insight into Mr. Clinton's convictions comes in Friends in High Places, a book by Mr. Hubble, who was the president's golfing partner in Arkansas and left government in disgrace, you'll recall, after pleading guilty to milking clients of his legal practice of $482,000. He reveals the president made the UFOs a priority when he appointed him as Associate Attorney General. He writes, quote, Clinton had said, I want you to find the answers to two questions for me. One, who killed JFK? And two, are there UFOs? Clinton was dead serious. I looked into both, but he was not satisfied with the answers. So, I don't know what that means. I guess it means he did not get any definitive answer to who killed JFK and no definitive answer to UFOs. But he got some kind of answer, and I wonder what it was. You know, the great debate about frogs, and we, of course, have frog deformities that are showing up everywhere. Researchers now in Duluth think that UV radiation is what's causing the deformities. Now, this was the great scare and the unknown. What was causing the deformities? And they were talking about various earthbound things that they thought might have done it. But now, according to researchers in Duluth, they believe it is UV radiation. That was the big fear. And the reason they believe this is because, unfortunately, they have been able to duplicate precisely the deformities by irradiating frogs with UV radiation. So there you are. The Duluth experiment took a dozen batches of fertilized leopard frog eggs, 100 in each batch, and exposed half of them to ultraviolet radiation and all of them to different concentrations of mefloprene, a pesticide used to control mosquitoes and some other insects. Of the frogs that developed, nearly 50% that were exposed to the UVB rays for more than a couple of weeks developed deformities in their hind limbs and digits. That's something you might want to certainly keep in mind. All right, I've got a lot more here that we could do. You remember the big brouhaha about sperm density? And you remember there was a big report that said sperm counts were declining all over the world? And then a second report that came back and said, no, sperm counts are what they always were. And now a third report, which says reanalysis of international data finds sharp decline in sperm density after an extensive review of data from 61 published studies. Three California researchers have concluded that a decline in average sperm density reported in the U.S. and other Western countries may be, brace yourself, even greater than previously estimated. Their analysis of data collected from 1938 through 1990 indicates that sperm densities in the U.S. have exhibited an average annual decrease of 1.5 million sperm per millimeter of collected sample, or about 1.5% per year. My. Well, all of our other worries and concerns, if this continues, will be for naught, certainly. Because if this continues, we won't. So, at first it was a big alarm, then it was nothing, and now, once again, it's actually even a bigger alarm. Can you imagine that? What if we slowly sort of just stopped reproducing? Now, all of this in the face of the recent story of the birth of seven babies. Count them, and they're still alive. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The trouble with this is that it used to be that if, you know, of course, they used a fertility drug. But at one time, I recall, if you had twins or triplets, people gave you stuff, you know, like diapers, maybe an occasional car, house, whatever. And I think the downside of the seven babies is it means people who have triplets, even quads, probably aren't going to get free stuff anymore. So if you're going to have a bunch of babies, you better have at least six. Seven would be good. Eight, of course, would get you into the big payday. All right, we're going to do open lines until Ed shows up at 11 o'clock Pacific time, or certainly in a little less than an hour. If you want to take a shot at what you think, that this is what I thought would be fun to do before Ed gets here, as to what you think the discontinuity is, I would be interested in hearing your speculation. We'll see if anybody hits it. So we'll get down to business and open lines and your calls and all that kind of stuff here in a moment. Well, finally, I can advertise it again. We advertised for the first time about a week and a half ago, night vision. Oh, it went crazy, and we sold out everything we could get our hands on, and then a little more. And so they sold right out. And I think it happened because a lot of people feel the way I do about it. And without going and burdening you with a story I've told now several times about why I got night vision, you know, there were people near me here in the middle of the night, and I couldn't see who they were, and I had to end up calling the sheriff, and it really ticked me off. And had I had my night vision, I would have seen clearly who was out there, and that never would have occurred. I'd have just let it go. You know, when you don't know who's walking your fence line, why, naturally, you're a little freaked out. Anyway, that sent me some time ago on my quest for night vision. In other words, I want to know what the hell's out there. We've got tons of security lights and security systems around the house, but out past a certain point, why, it's dark. You can't see. And so I began personally to look into, you know, night vision. And that's how it's a product right now, because I spent a lot of time trying to figure out exactly what was the best on the market. And we've got it. It's by ATN. It's the MO2 Night Vision Scope. And I can't imagine why anybody wouldn't want to have one. What a great Christmas gift. In other words, what's going on in the dark? Do you have a dark backyard, front yard? I tell you, when you look through this, it's like daytime. Is somebody standing out there in the dark? You can see them. They can't see you. Animals in trees, animals running, coyotes out in the desert. Man, I can see it all. It turns night into day. It has a built-in adjustable infrared illuminator, so you can see in complete and absolute total darkness. It's got a 90mm 3-power f1.2 lens. Is light and weight, easy to use, has a 2-year warranty, is made in America, constructed here in America, has everything you would want in terms of backup. In other words, you know, for example, there are some Russian night vision things on the market out there, but I was, when I investigated all of this, extremely hesitant to buy anything made in Russia, not because it might not be good, but because if anything ever went wrong with it, well, you can imagine service under those conditions would be a nightmare. So, we've got it. Night vision. And if you want to get it, finally, we've got a few in again. Now, listen to me. These are going to sell out very, very quickly. So, don't wait. When I say tomorrow morning you can get night vision, don't wait. Believe me, don't wait. It's $349.95. And it runs, by the way, on a 3-volt lithium battery that seems to last and last and last. I am still using the first 3-volt lithium that I got. You can get those in any hardware store or whatever. So I declare this the coolest new product of the year. That's what I say. The best new product of the year. Beijing really was last year. This year, there's no question about it. Night vision is actually, it's unbelievable. When you look at it, your mind is blown. You go, oh my God, look at that. It's like, you can see everything. So if you want one, and I consider this to be the very best, call the Sea Crane Company in the morning at 7:30 a.m. Pacific time, 10:30 a.m. the East, adjust for your time zone, at 1-800-522-8863. That's 1-800-522-8863. The Sea Crane Company. You are going to love night vision. As a matter of fact, in most time zones, you've got about 3 days to get that done, and then it's all over. Okay, here we go. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. This is Dave in Cape Coral, Florida.
Hi, Dave.
Yeah, yesterday I was real excited when I got my Art Bell After Dark newsletter and saw my tornado pictures on the front page.
Well, you see, we follow up on things, Dave, that's why. Thought they were very cool pictures.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And I just wanted to let you know that my prediction number one for 1997 did come true. It was prediction number one on your New Year's show.
Which was?
Jacques Villeneuve would be the Formula One world champion, and he is.
Well, you know, we're getting close to the time, Dave, where we will pull out the predictions from the Bell family vault and begin doing new predictions. That occurs generally on this program between Christmas and the New Year. And so yours will be the first reviewed, and it will get a ding, 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 ding.
All right. Thank you.
All right, anything else?
That should do it.
All right, Dave, thanks for the call, and have a good morning. Yes, it's worth reminding you that we do that. It is a ritual, a ritualistic. And you know what? The audience, I must say, has been doing very, very well in recent years in predicting things. Now, I wonder if that indicates, when you think about it, maybe a general increase in psychic ability in the population. Now, there's an interesting thing to contemplate. As we get closer to some sort of event, or if you wish, discontinuity, it may well be that more people out there are getting more intuitive. And maybe that's the way it was supposed to happen. Anyway, bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM.
In the Kingdom of Nye, from east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. That's 1-800-825-5033. From what? 1-8-8255. That's 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, dial ART at area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
I appear to be here once again. Good morning, everybody. This, of course, is, Thanksgiving week. As a matter of fact, let's see, what is today anyway? Tuesday going into Wednesday. Did you send flowers? If you didn't, then you still can. And you can do it because I've got a great sponsor named Absolutely Fresh Flowers. They are, of course, a flower farm in Southern California that sells flowers to all of you, straight to you. And I don't know that flowers will help head off the great discontinuity, whatever it's going to be. But one small step, you know, little steps, step at a time, individual action. And believe me, when you send flowers to somebody you love for Thanksgiving or for any reason, birthdays, anniversaries, whatever, is one definite small step for mankind and you. When I say mankind, I mean that metaphorically and literally. $42.95 is the price. And it's a good deal. It includes delivery by FedEx. And they get this giant box, a triangular box full of flowers and a card from you with whatever you want to say and your name at the bottom, handwritten. Good deal, huh? So call them. What else can I say? 1-800-562-6438. That's 1-800-562-6438. Absolutely fresh flowers. Now, okay. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. Where are you, pray tell?
I'm calling from WWSC, Glens Falls, New York.
Okay.
And I want to tell you what I think is the problem with the rats in Chile.
What?
I grew up there. I was raised there. I was educated there. And I went to Santiago High School there.
Well, rats are the last thing you want to find in Chile. I usually have crackers.
Well, I think back in the 70s, they discovered that birth control pills were good for houseplants. So the women...
What?
Yes.
What? Birth control pills were good for houseplants?
Yes.
Does it prevent their...
No. What they did was somebody accidentally spilled one into a plant that grew to be the most beautiful houseplant you'd ever want to see.
I once took a birth control pill by mistake.
You what?
Yeah, I took one by mistake once.
Anyway, the houseplants started to grow big and beautiful and...
Really?
Gigantic.
Really?
Yeah, really.
For me, it was just I noticed my voice raised about an octave for a while, but
I noticed.
It turned to normal. No, you're serious.
I'm serious. I grew up down there. I spent my first 22 years of my life down there.
Can you imagine finding a 2-foot rat?
God, it's scary.
2-foot rat. Now, I mean, do that with your hands. That is a dog-sized rat.
I don't have to do it with my hand. I could just picture it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Sharp little teeth.
But I think the hormones, if they're feeding hormones to the chickens, along with rats probably eating, maybe they used it in their gardens to get the biggest strawberries.
Well said, sir. So you think the real answer is birth control pills?
Well, maybe it's a combination of both.
Well, it's a
when did they start giving them the hormones to the chickens?
You mean no, not hormones. I was talking about chickens. You mean the antibiotics?
Oh, I thought you said they were giving hormones to the chickens.
No, antibiotics, and they are developing a resistance to certain chicken diseases, and a lot of this is getting passed on to people, I guess. If you don't cook it right, of course it gets passed on to people.
Well, I think that's a government statement, but I do know for a fact that the women with their houseplants, they were just... Oh. And they started doing it in Colombia and in Peru. You know, the word gets out, who's got the best houseplants?
Well,
you know?
Of course, and if it takes birth control pills, it takes birth control pills. It's kind of tempting to try that. I wonder if you ground it up or you just sort of stuff a pill down into the dirt. That's tempting to try. I don't know. Everything we do has consequences. Give birth control pills to plants and you get rats. 2-foot-long rats. Oil Guard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
How you doing, Art?
Well, I'm okay.
Hey, you know, I was just coming up with a programming idea for one of your next guests.
You were.
This is Tony in Las Vegas.
Yes, Tony.
Wouldn't it be neat to get a guest on your show that could discuss what they do with the, let's say, the UFO videos and so forth?
What do you mean?
That get on, like, you know, sightings and Strange Universe.
What do you mean what they do with them?
Well, the screening process that they have to go through just to be on, till they finally get on the air.
Well, they have to be real UFOs.
Well, yeah, but... I know that for a fact that if somebody took a picture of a UFO...
Well, this isn't no-brainer, Tony. They've got to look good. You know, sometimes you get foggy, fuzzy, lousy little, you know, obvious...
Yeah, exactly.
Frisbees or something, and you know, so they've got to look good. I mean,
right.
So it's no big deal.
Yeah, but
I mean, I'm in touch all the time with the people at Strange Universe, and it's a matter of what looks good and what looks credible and what looks crappy.
Right, but even if something looks crappy, if it's being screened and then the CIA says, hey, that's, you know, nothing that you can have on your program, we don't care how terrible.
Oh, I don't believe that, Tony.
Well, it would be neat, the process that they go through and how many times they get confronted,
Tony,
by people like
no,
the CIA.
No. All right, thanks, Tony. No go there. I know the people at these programs. I know them. And trust me, if the CIA were to come in and say, you can't run that UFO picture, it would be such a gigantic story that they would probably promo the damn thing in Sweeps Week for a month, get on my show, say, hey, Men in Black, CIA types came in and said, we can't run this one. Want to see it? Want to take a ride? So, no, I don't buy that at all. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, Art, it's Vince in Chicago.
Vince in Chicago.
I'm going to make a stab at Ed Dames and the...
discontinuity.
Yeah, the year 2012.
Okay.
I think it's a pole shift. That is the actual year of the pole shift. I'm kind of amazed, Art, that it seems like every other guest of yours on the program for the past month has mentioned the pole shift.
Tell me about it.
It's amazing. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot about this. And I kind of believe that this might be one of the great secrets of our planet. The fact that there may be a pole shift that happens with regularity every 12,000 years, let's say, and it wipes out the planet. And it's one of those forbidden secrets that we're not supposed to know about. And if our government or somebody knows about this pole shift, they're not going to tell us. And they're just not going to tell us. You know, because it would cause more problems than anything. Everyone would be heading out to the mountains of New Mexico like Richard Hoagland.
For what, though? I mean, to what end? If the poles shift, then, you know, if you believe the worst, then everything's going to more or less get wiped clean anyway.
Exactly. So what use would it be that if this knowledge was known by someone, what knowledge, what purpose would it serve that, you know, that we would... You know, if we told everybody about it, like I said, we'd all head for the hills.
Yeah, we'd run our credit cards up. you know, general disorder and dismay.
I kind of find it kind of unusual that Richard Hoagland did move up to, you know, what is it, 8,500 feet above sea level over there?
That's right.
In New Mexico?
Maybe he's expecting a flood.
I documented a lot of his programs with you and him, and I know he's talked about the boat people, the Nordic people, building their arcs.
Well, I will give you a disturbing bit of information. Okay? A little preview. You want some disturbing information?
Go ahead.
All right. I had Ed send me a quick bio so I could introduce him tonight. I don't know what I did with the old one I had on him, right? And you know what it says?
What?
Under personal category, it says home, Beverly Hills, California. One more month.
And he's moving.
Yeah.
That's a good question I'm asking. Where is he going? I know he mentioned caves before.
Well, he doesn't really want to say. He doesn't exactly say. He says west and south.
That's my whole point, Art, that if there are people in the know that there's going to be a pole shift someday, let's say, or some year, they're not going to tell us because they are staking out their claim to be the survivors.
Well, you know what we have to hope for, Vince? You know, like in Iraq where we use the phrase moving the goalposts?
Right.
We've got to hope they move the pole posts. Got to go, Vince.
Okay,
thanks.
Take care, Art.
You too. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going.
This is Mike St. Peter's.
St. Peter's,
Missouri.
Missouri, all right.
Yeah, around St. Louis.
Yes, sir.
I'll take a stab at this Major Ed Dames prediction.
Yes, the discontinuity is?
I kind of remote viewing my own on this whole deal.
Well, now, don't let that buzzer sound.
Oh, well, I won't. I just had a view of a great wind, like a jet stream.
Ah.
Blowing like hot air across the Earth's surface.
Well, now, the jet stream has already been predicted long ago to come down on deck by Ed Dames, and I'll be damned if it hasn't been.
Yeah, okay. I know.
So that was a long time ago.
Right, yeah. Well, this one, I had kind of like a military person standing in a field with a large pickle croc gathering cow chips? Right.
For what?
Well, that's what he's gathering his cow chips to make it fit in his croc. And that is what Ed Dames' predictions are.
A croc.
With these content.
You think it's a croc?
Yeah, big croc.
I see. Well, you know what opinions...
I have my doubts.
You know what opinions are like, right?
Yeah.
They're kind of related to cow chips. Everybody's got one.
I was wondering, are we going to get an affiliate here in St. Louis again?
As a matter of fact, it's interesting you should say that. How does a week sound?
Oh, really? Who's it going to be?
My lips are sealed. I got to go.
Okay.
All right, take care. Yeah, it says Beverly Hills, California. One more month. East to the Rockies. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hello, Art.
Hi, where are you?
This is Mark calling from Collinsville, Illinois on SATCOM.
Yes, Mark.
I'd like to point out that your interviews with Dr. Gold and Bob and Kathy Guccione are a great public service.
Thank you. I take it you heard Dr. Gold last night.
I've been following this very closely. You are to be admired, sir.
Well, I appreciate that.
I've been following very close. Are you planning on having Robert Morningsky back on your show in the near future?
Yes.
How soon?
No. Soon.
And one more thing. How about Thomas Van Flanderen? He made this comment about Hellbop, the third tail, having sodium or ocean water. There was no follow-up on that. Very interesting.
He will probably come back in conjunction, I would imagine, with Richard Hoagland, who will be on soon.
Well, you know, Heaven's Gate sort of killed all that. And it really didn't go anywhere, but that was a very...
Well, no, what really happened was the comet, you know, sort of left our sight, out of sight, out of mind.
Well, it's still in the southern hemisphere.
Well, it is, but we're not seeing it.
And one more thing about the Fisteria. It's in the northern sea now?
Yeah, that's right. They have detected Fisteria in the North Sea. Want something to worry about that. On the international line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, Art. This is Roman from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Hello there.
I would like to contribute to the discussion about the coming changes.
Yes.
At the beginning of the 70s, back in Poland, in Warsaw, I participated in kind of private researches regarding parapsychology.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to tell you something very interesting.
All right.
We did some researches regarding certain states of mind in hypnosis. The objects were young students studying at the Warsaw University at that time.
Yes.
And I participated in these experiments. I noticed something very interesting when the experiments were regarding time progression. The subjects were giving the suggestion of the time going forward in the increments of about 2 years, sometimes 4 years, and the subjects were asked to put the signature on the paper.
Yes.
And believe me or not, I've seen it many, many times. People, young people in their early 20s or around 19, 20, 21, 22, they were putting signatures. When the suggestions about time were changing, they changed their signatures. What we noticed was that some of them, when you reached the year 2004, many young people just didn't want to sign, to put their signatures on the paper. And the reaction was, they dropped the pens or put a kind of cross on the paper.
Well, that's very,
question,
very,
question.
Very ominous.
The question was, why aren't you putting your signature on the paper?
And the
I cannot. Why?
Yes.
I don't live.
Oh, God.
And, yes, it's very interesting. I've seen it many, many times. And all of them mentioned the same year, 2004. That was done in Poland, in Warsaw.
Well, if that's true, the best advice for you and for everybody else is play hard, life is short. Right? That is ominous, though. They either put a cross there, or when asked why they couldn't sign, said, because I don't live. All right. When it comes to information on ETs, I bet you can't get enough. And I bet you probably saw Area 51, the alien interview, a little tiny piece of it on Extra or maybe Strange Universe. Well, we've got the full video now. And I'm getting emails and emails and emails. Please send me the number so I can get the tape. Just listen to me now. Get a pencil. Please. This is an apparent video of an alien being interviewed by officials. Couch that a little at Area 51. Victor, who I interviewed on this program, spirited this out of Area 51. He's now in fear of his life in deep hiding. You know, I've had an offer out to re-interview Victor, and I've gotten nothing. Zero. No response. And I think that means he really is hiding. Because, you know, they'd really want to give this a kick if they could, so they'd bring Victor forward. So I think he really isn't hiding. Call 1-800-510-3420 now, right now. Oh, it's $19.95 plus shipping and handling. You can get it by calling 1-800-510-3420. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, this is Mary from Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. You were talking about the mutant, the frogs and stuff.
That's right. The latest Duluth research is showing that it is due to ultraviolet radiation, and they can prove that because they can duplicate it. That's how science works.
Right. Because there's been times, like, we'll be listening to the weather, and I don't know, but they talk about, like, there's the radiation in the air is so strong.
Well, they give UV counts, yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. And I was wondering, you know, has Chernobyl, like, would that nuclear radiation still be in the air?
Well, it'd be, yeah, sure. Over there it might be, but it has nothing to do with the UV radiation count.
Okay, but it wouldn't... Would it still stick in the air because...
Now, were you to ask me, might it have something to do with the 2-foot-long rats in Chile? Then we might be on the right path.
That's just what I'm wondering, and all the nuclear testing that they're doing, you know.
Are you tempted to put a birth control pill in a plant?
No, I would not.
No?
No.
Even if you knew your plant was going to grow to be twice as big?
No. That's against Mother Nature. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't know. It just seems like nobody's really talking about the, the nuclear events that have been going on. And with all the diseases that are forming and
I talk about it all the time.
Well, I know you do, but the government doesn't and the TV doesn't.
That's right.
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah.
Why do you think they don't?
Well, I think they think we're stupid or something, or we'd be too scared. It's like they're putting one over on us, you know?
Well, they could be right. In other words, if you know something is going to happen, no matter what it is,
right,
and you know that people would panic if they knew about it, and right, the panic would cause needless early demise of people, right, then you might make a decision, and properly so, not to disseminate the information.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
I mean,
do you want
to know? I mean, let's say you knew something horrible was going to happen in 6 months, and if you'll listen next hour, that could be the case.
I know.
Would you want to know is the question.
Well, I'm listening to your radio station, so
I guess that. Well, yeah, but are you going to be listening next hour?
Yes, I will. All night long.
All right. Thank you very much.
Have a good night, Arthur.
Yep, you too. Thank you. Coming up next, is SciTech Major Ed Dames. And finally, we are about to know what the great discontinuity is. Now, of course, we're not going to lead off the show with that, so don't expect to hear that right away. You know I don't work that way. We are going to, for the sake of the new audience, educate them just a little bit about what remote viewing is and what it is not. At any rate, the one you've been waiting for, Major Ed Dames, next. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Art Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. Dial area code 702-727-8499. That's area code 702-727-8499. Please limit faxes to one or two pages. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and I am now going to issue my standard warning. The material straight ahead in this program is going to be extremely disturbing to some people. We are going to have Ed Dames, SciTech's Major Ed Dames, who is actually part of our own government's remote viewer program. And we will endeavor to give you the 101 short version of what remote viewing is here shortly. But we did, the U.S. taxpayers, in fact, they did a whole Nightline show about it, spent millions of dollars over many years on remote viewing. Major Dames was in that program. Remote viewing is able to, and I hope I don't misrepresent this, but look at an object or occurrence anywhere in the world through space and time. Into the future, into the past, or look at present situations. Obviously, the military used it for very pragmatic reasons, intelligence work. They used it during the Iraq War, and on and on and on and on. Well, Major Dames has now retired and began a company called SciTech. That's PSI Tech. And We'll try and give you an idea of remote viewing, what it's all about here in a moment, as I said. But there is no doubt about the fact that what you are going to hear tonight is going to be extremely disturbing to some people. And if you have children in the room, act like a parent and get them out. If, in fact, this kind of information disturbs you, you get out of the room. Go turn off the radio. Go listen to music, whatever. I don't know. I just serve up that warning because inevitably I'm castigated for presenting this kind of information. And so if you're the kind of person who is disturbed by it, consider yourself to have been warned. Having said that, coming up in a moment, SciTech Major Ed Dames. Well, okay. Now comes Major Ed Dames. Let me tell you a little bit about him, all right? In 1967 through 74, he was U.S. Army enlisted, airborne infantry, Army security, that kind of stuff. In 78, he went to ROTC, graduated as a distinguished military graduate, University of California at Berkeley. In 79 through 82, he was with the 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment, Nuremberg, Germany, Tactical Electronics Warfare Officer. In 1982 through 4, he was U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Command Systems Exploitation Department, a Targeting Officer. In 84 through 88, he was with the Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA, a Directorate of Scientific and Technical Intelligence, Training Officer and Operations Officer, and then 88 through 91, Headquarters Department of the Army, Special Operations, 91, retired from the U.S. Army in the rank of Major. His educational background is 74 through 77, UC Berkeley, Biophysics, 78, a B.A. in Chinese, San Francisco State University. He was born in Hackensack, New Jersey in 1949. His home is in Beverly Hills, California, but that's only for one more month. His interests include physical fitness, martial arts, human potential, frontier sciences, religion, fluent in Chinese Mandarin. That certainly may come in handy. Now, as I said earlier, our government for many years spent a lot of money on remote viewing. Ed Dames has taken it to the private sector. Ed Dames, of all the things he said on this program, the one most disconcerting thing has to do with something that he calls the discontinuity. Now, what does that mean? Well, there is a year past which remote viewers cannot see, or it's kind of like a barrier, at least for a period of years, and they simply have been unable to see what's there until now. Now, a lot of people have speculated the discontinuity might be some sort of pole shift. It might be, what else did we hear? I had a bunch of faxes here about what it might be. People have guessed quite a few things. Electromagnetic shift, going through some faxes. Other people have thought a religious event of some sort. You heard somebody mention a cross and that people would refuse to write their name past a certain year. And so forth and so on. So a lot of people have a lot of guesses, and the guessing, I guess, is about to end. As is the dry weather here, rain is on the way. As the El Nino continues to build, San Francisco getting a downpour right now. And I guess it's going to be raining here by tomorrow. Here from Beverly Hills, California, one of the last times we'll be able to introduce him this way is Major Ed Dames. Major, welcome.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm fine. I would, I have missed your program for quite a number of nights, except for last night. I caught most of that, and it dealt with the
TWA.
Yeah, TWA 800, and the topic of perhaps a missile attack.
That's right, and I know that you, of course, disagree with that and have reached other conclusions. We'll get to that, Ed, but listen, we've got a lot of new listeners out there, and they have no idea what remote viewing is. And so just the short version, if you would, you spent years in the military doing it, now years as a civilian. And so tell people what remote viewing really is.
It is a way that one train. We are trained psychics. That's what we were in the military in a top secret unit. We are trained to gather as much general information, data and sketches, information and sketches about a target, a person, place, thing, or an event, in a 45-minute period, as much data as possible. We are alert and attentive when we do this. It's not an altered state. And generally speaking, what we do is what we take advantage of, avail ourselves of a discovery. The discovery was discovered in a laboratory in 1983. And the discovery is, in essence, the way that the unconscious mind communicates information to conscious awareness. With that, it's sort of the syntax and the grammar for the way it does that, in a way that precludes imagination from entering into the process or interfering with that data stream.
Well, one thing I know you did was to locate some gas canisters in Iraq.
We've done nothing but very high-level missions. We're sort of a national asset, if you will. There are very few of us who are trained to the degree that SciTech experts are trained, and so we generally do high-level missions. And although SciTech does not engage in government contract work, we will still do initiative projects, and that's what we did for the National Transportation Safety Board on the
Flight 800.
Mm-hmm. There was a this was an interesting project because, as the operations and training officer for the military psychic team in 1988. We actually broke open the case on the Pan American Flight 103 that exploded over Lockerbie, Scotland. We tracked down for the FBI the perpetrators of that event. So we found the terrorist. In that case, it was a terrorist attack, and we did find them for the Bureau.
I recall. And again, trying to impart to people what a remote viewing is. A remote viewer is a controlled, disciplined individual, and when I say controlled by somebody else. In other words, they are given a number, a simple number, as I understand it, and they then do not go into an altered state, but begin to form impressions and begin to visualize what the target is. Now, the only thing that I've never clearly understood at all about remote viewing is they're given a number, and then somehow they come up. For example, they will draw a picture of gas canisters and describe a location as though they see it, or their impressions of where, what it is and where it is. I think this is pretty close to the way it works, but I've never understood what that number really represents. In other words, how does that person's mind know what the target is? Is there a communication ad between the monitor, the controller, and the remote viewer that goes beyond that number?
Yes, the number is irrelevant. It's simply for filing purposes, and it's as simple as one could as easily say, ready, set, go, that for every target that we work. There is a communication at the unconscious level. If you do work with a monitor, tantamount to having a navigator in the back seat of an aircraft,
sure,
allegorically speaking, then unconsciously the viewer's unconscious mind picks up the cue, the targeting cue, from the monitor or the tasker. If you work by yourself and you select your own targets, but my company teaches people to do this, to work alone,
mm-hmm,
one selects one's own targets. And those could be front-loaded. And what that means is you will know what the target is. But you work, you're trained to work against blind targets. Unconscious is trained to do all of the work. So during training, as a control and technical operations, we do not allow the viewers to know what the target is. Unconscious must do all of the work. If you are your own tasker, your
uh-huh,
own targeter,
yes,
you select the target yourself, and then you're not communicating, your unconscious mind is not communicating with anybody else.
I take it, Ed. I know that when you have taken up a project, a specific project, it takes a lot of time. People think that you're a psychic, and they can say, what color is my couch? Well, that isn't the way it works, and you don't get a direct answer like that. Some of the work takes days, weeks, or even months to accomplish for a project. People need to understand that. So you're not a psychic in the classic sense that people, I think, tend to think of psychics, right?
No, I could not. I'm about as naturally psychic as a rock. A natural psychic can walk into a room and pick up certain sensations and know if this is a loving household or a murder was committed, that kind of thing. I can't do that. But I can run rings around natural psychics when it comes to detailing exactly what happened at a murder scene, where the murderer is present time, where the victim is, whether the victim is dead or alive, those kinds of things, because of these breakthrough techniques that we used in life or death situations or where deadly force was authorized, such
as
the Libyan invasion.
Well, of course. Let me ask this. An individual who has learned to self-task and remote view through your videotapes or whatever else, would their accuracy rating, percentile rating, be different than when your company puts or tasks several remote viewers, you know, to look into, say, flight 800 or whatever? In other words, would there be a difference in the number of hits?
It isn't measured in terms of hits. It's measured in terms of quality of the data. Generally speaking, someone who is trained by using the TRV tapes is 80% correct. 80% of their data is correct. And the most that we, including myself, the best that we as individual viewers, even the experts, can do is about 90%. There'll always be a 10 to 20% error rate throughout the sessions. However, when a team of remote viewers, including a number of people who have been trained using the tapes, work together, a team of five or six people, when they work alone, independently, the mutually corroborating data is 100% correct.
100%?
100%.
So that when your company tasks a group of viewers and finally puts their name to whatever the conclusion is, you can be damn sure that's going to be 100% correct.
Unless it's a jump through the hoop type of a situation where there's a stolen nuclear weapon or something like that, where we'd have to come up with data very, very rapidly. And it is not real time. It takes about 45 minutes for just one session. In order for us to cross-check and double-check our work, we're going to have to run about five remote viewers three times each. That's a minimum of 15 remote viewing sessions times 45 minutes to come up to a conclusion that I, as president of the company, would sign my name to.
Okay. A somewhat less than amazing Randy continues to respond in an email war between yourself and his standing challenge, and claims that you will not sign and fill out forms that he requires to do the test that would yield you, I don't know, whatever, $1 million+, whatever it happens to be right now. And as you know, I have invited him on the program, and he has refused to come on to set up the conditions of the test. And I personally talked to the guy, and he was talking about putting a number in his safe. And he now denies he ever said that. Well, he did say it to me. And then I came back on the air and talked to you about it and issued the challenge. And every time I do, everybody emails the amazing Randy, less than. And he says, well, I'm not going to play the game. I'm not going to go on an Art Bell show and help him increase ratings. And I refuse. And so there you. That's where it is now. Do you hear from Randy?
I hear from his minions or lackeys on the email. And frankly, Amazing Randy can keep his $1 million. I accept his challenge. And he can. All I want is for him to eat his hat when we nail his target, and he can keep his mill or whatever he's got out there. But I'm telling you now, I'm telling all of your listeners, we can do this without any problem whatsoever, and I mean it. I stand by that, and I do not want his money, but I do want to see him eat his hat.
Well, I thought it reasonable that he would come on the program not for some spectacular deal, but just simply publicly set up the conditions of the test. You know, I didn't like the idea that he was going to put the numbers in his safe. It ought to be in somebody's, it ought to be very controlled, in a third-party location, it seems to me.
Of course.
So that deal continues.
And what we suggested, what we suggested was a good way to do that is to have a disinterested party, actually a neutral party,
mm-hmm.
simply write the name of a target on a piece of paper and place that piece of paper in a safe somewhere. That's
sure.
all that we require.
Sure.
Because you see how we work. There's chain of custody at the unconscious level. Whoever is the tasker, the universal mind, the collective conscious, unconscious,
mm-hmm.
or actually what we call the matrix in our business, it knows what's going on. My old boss used to say it's okay to fool the enemy, but it's not okay to fool yourself. We know what the task is. As soon as we turn our attention to the task, unconscious attention follows.
When you were in the military program, Ed, obviously the military was only concerned with the here and now, targets, biological canisters, whatever it is they were after. It was military-oriented stuff. I'm curious, at what point did it dawn on the RVers, remote viewers, that you could actually not just look at present time, but you could travel in time and look at the past, or even, more importantly, look at the future? When did it dawn on all of you that that was possible?
It started happening actually in the laboratory before the formation of the military team. Viewers were slipping around in time. They were describing targets that were supposed to in a docket. They were describing targets that were two up in a docket or a target that had been chosen a day before, those kinds of things. So viewers were very loose in time. We had to straighten that. We had to tighten that structure up.
Mm.
Mind is outside of time.
Was that a disturbing thing for the remote viewers to find out?
It was disturbing for the researchers because it meant that there was no control, and that this, since it was a government-funded project, if they could not know where the viewer was in time, they couldn't sell this to the Department of Defense, and therefore...
Do you think that's actually what ended the supposedly the official military program?
No, that's not when it ended. It ended because all of the controls became so lax and loose that it was no longer functional.
Gotcha. All right. Ed Dames, Major Ed Dames, SciTech's Ed Dames, is my guest. And now I think you might have a little bit of an idea what remote viewing is. Wait till you hear what's to come next.
Talk with Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM from outside the U.S. First, dial your access numbers to the USA. Then dial 1-800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
It is, and once again, here I am. My guest is SciTech's Major Ed Dames. The subject, remote viewing. The question we will get to eventually, the discontinuity. But first, we're going to cover much more of what remote viewing is and what it is not. Join the computer age with this revolutionary new system. Call 1-800-354-6846 and never again be intimidated by a computer. Howard from Chico, California writes, "Hey, Art, have you checked out the earthquake activity at Mammoth Lakes lately? There have been over 2,000 earthquakes in the last few days. Yes, I am fairly well aware of what's going on at Mammoth." And then we've got one more prediction on what the discontinuity is. Hi, Art. My guess on the Major's discontinuity, a very large, gargantuan time compression. No doubt orchestrated by Colonel Haynes, with what few psychics may remain within the government. That was a joke. Major Dames, welcome back.
Thanks. By the way, Art, the Long Valley caldera there at Monmouth Lakes.
Yes.
I had said that a good thing that Forsytech to do in terms of predictive studies rather than just present time studies would be to look at, and we use this as a targeting cue, the next volcanic eruption, and we qualified that search term. This is just like a library search.
Right.
We qualified it with North America. And it actually took us a while to do this because we were in fairly homogeneous terrain, but it is the Long Valley caldera. Now, what do we gain by doing that? It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that that's probably the next place that's going to erupt. But we use the same methods in everything that we do, and sometimes we come up with the mundane and jejune and an answer that anybody could get.
Sure.
But other times it's very singular, as in the case of the next use of a nuclear weapon in anger. And there, that's not entirely predictable. It's a singular event that could not be predicted. So we use the same methods to find, whether it's to find somebody's lost dog or stolen nuclear weapon, or in a predictive sense, to look at the next event. And because next and present, in terms of ideas or vectors in the matrix, are the only temporal cues that we know we can trust. The idea of present time, a target in present time, or describe the next event.
Mm-hmm.
Any other point in time is very difficult for us. It's loose. It takes a lot of work.
Would you please qualify things? Last time you said the same thing, just sort of as a reference point, you said lost dogs, and I got a million emails asking you to look for people's dogs. You don't do dogs now, right?
No, I use it as an example.
I understand. Thank you.
I think I would do it if my cat were missing.
I understand that.
However, that would be a very difficult target. It would be we ran into similar things looking for Manuel Noriega or Muammar Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein.
You did locate Noriega, didn't you?
It was a shell game type of thing because these were targets that knew we were after them, and what we had to do, because it takes us at least 2 hours, it took the military team at least 2 hours to come up with some type of conclusion that could be useful to a targeting team. The target had already moved. The person had moved on to the next target. So there are two ways around that. We can use the term next in terms of next location or next target location, or we can go into the target's mind present time, let's say Muammar Gaddafi, and attempt to discern where he is looking at moving next. So there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Actually in their mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've talked about this before. That is remote viewing, remote sensing, some people call it. Princeton has done a lot of research. They call it remote sensing, but they absolutely believe it is a valid discipline. And I have asked experts who did the work at Princeton, and I will ask you again, is it possible to remotely not just sense or view, but influence? In other words, to actually cause somebody to imagine they're having an idea or to affect their behavior or thinking in any way.
I was up at Princeton about 3 or 4 months ago, and they're about 15 years behind in the remote percepting or remote viewing arena. But you know they're the world's leaders in terms of psychokinesis work.
Oh, yes.
In terms of mind over matter, man-machine interfaces, they have statistically validated the existence of that phenomenon. In terms of influencing another human being, no. We were not able to achieve that in the military. We put a lot of resources into it, not as much as remote viewing, but some resources, and it was not a doable thing. However, it can be done with equipment. It can be done electromagnetically.
All right. Right now, we're having a big go-round, as you well know, with Iraq again.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like I'm making a prediction that in 7 to 10 days, we're actually going to be back at war. I think that the Iraqis are not going to allow these 60-plus sites to be looked at. We're going to intentionally provoke a confrontation by going straight to those sites. And we're going to then get kicked out again, or we're going to leave. And then the bombs will fall once again on Iraq. Now, the late news tonight is that by William Cohen, our defense secretary, Saddam Hussein has been able to get together enough chemical and biological stuff to kill every man, woman, and child on the entire face of the earth. Now, it seems to me the location of that stuff would be a good target for you.
Well, we did this for the United Nations, as you know, in 1991.
Yes.
Let me qualify something. I was one of this country's biological warfare case officers. It was my job to protect the country against lesser developed countries and major nations' use.
Oh, then maybe you can help me out with something here.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that he's got VX, Victor X-ray,
mm-hmm.
a lethal nerve agent. What is VX, Ed?
VX is just that, a very lethal nerve agent. It is a U.S. variant. It's a U.S. variant on a nerve agent. The former Soviet equivalent was VR-55. It stops your breathing. I won't go into all the biophysics and what happens at the molecular action site, but it'll shut your breathing down.
Well, that's sufficient.
Now, he does have a lot of biochemicals, but you have to apply them, and you have to weaponize them. So even though you might have enough to kill every man, woman, and child in the world, that's not saying a lot. You've got to be able to put those, to weaponize them, and make sure your weapons work the right way, and that is a science. And yes, he's got enough to do some damage in the Mideast, but not to
America.
It's not a doomsday machine.
He would have to backpack them in across the Mexican border or something to affect a U.S. city.
You would have to. The way to effectively do it would be to aerosolize any number of biologicals, anthrax variants, things like that.
He's got
put him in a truck, aerosolize it, drive around the city a few times at night. You got to do it at night because when the sun comes out, the ultraviolet radiation will break the peptide bonds in amino acids and denature your organism. So it's a whole science art.
Oh, that's interesting. He's got 6,000 gallons of anthrax. That's a lot of anthrax.
Yeah, but once you expose it to the sun, it's gone. Now, if it's underneath ground or underneath paint or anything else like that,
uh-huh.
it will last for centuries. Because the spores will last for centuries. And once you kick up the dust and you breathe it, you're dead.
Well, the other, you could locate that, or you could locate for us Saddam Hussein. Now, I know that we say that we don't kill heads of foreign states, but we want to kill him. I know that. And
we might want to do that. The problem with this man is that he's very shrewd.
Oh, yes.
And he has children travel around with him. So we're not a totalitarian dictatorship. We don't drop bombs on children.
Well, as a matter of fact, he's got women and children now at all these sensitive locations.
That's correct.
So we are going to, maybe we are going to drop bombs on women and children.
No, we would not do that, Art. U.S. government would never do anything like that. At least no U.S. government that I'm familiar with. There are other governments that would do it, but the U.S. would never do that, Art.
Well, suppose we actually had intelligence, Ed, that he was really about to use some horrible biological weapon, something really awful, then we might do it. I mean, it really comes down to lives versus lives. And if we thought millions of lives were at stake and we knew where this stuff was, we might do it.
I think we would go after the batteries, the firing batteries, but it's possible that we would do that. But I think retaliation is the name of the game. Last time I checked in at the Pentagon, it was still retaliation in those terms. If those are used, our policy was tactical nuclear weapons in response.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any sense at all of what lies ahead with regard to Iraq?
I think just as a gut feeling, I have not remote viewed the Iraqi situation.
Mm-hmm.
We're busy on other things that we're going to talk about momentarily. But I agree with you. I think we'll provoke a reason to expend a lot of munitions, and this time hit him a little bit harder.
Well, it'll be interesting. I think 7 to 10 days, probably somewhere around there, we're getting ready to challenge them. I think we're doing it all on our own timetable, and we know exactly what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm. tend to agree.
All right. Are there any projects in the interim since we last talked, major remote viewing projects, other than the discontinuity?
We've dropped almost all of our initiative projects. In fact, we've dropped everyone. We had a small project that was very interesting because it lends itself to illustrating our Module 2 tapes, and we're going to put that up on the website, and that deals with looking at the nature of... Are you familiar with the botched Mossad assassination attempt on the Hamas leader?
Oh, listen, I was in Israel while Netanyahu was going through public relations hell because of what happened. So, yes, I'm familiar.
What we did was identify the actual item that he was attacked with, what the Israelis used in that attack. And we remote viewed that, and we're going to post a very good session.
Can you tell us a little bit of what I remember is that the victim claimed that somebody walked by him or up to him and sprayed him with something, and then the symptoms began, found himself in the hospital, life-threatening situation. But apparently they didn't get the spray, you know, in the right place or enough of it or whatever.
Or the Israelis gave them the antidote. Usually when you develop a biological weapon, except the Russians, there were exceptions in Russia, when one develops a new weapon, a biological weapon...
You always want the antidote.
They darn well have an antidote.
Right.
If it's a straight disease vector, you better have a vaccine.
Or it might bite you in the butt.
It might bite you very hard. You need a counter for even chemical weapons too, as you know. In this case, it was a bacterial toxin. Now, we traced back the source of the bacterial toxin. Once we identified the toxin as bacterial,
right,
we wanted to see the source. And what we did was sketch a location that was within Israel proper, where these bacterial toxins were being in vats grown and produced and weaponized, which
right,
means that Israel essentially has an offensive biological warfare program. But so what?
No surprise there.
Not really.
I think I heard earlier that 60 countries now are working on the poor man's, or have, rather, the poor man's atomic bomb. Yeah. And so I kind of wonder what lies ahead. I mean, maybe I've suddenly just hit on the discontinuity, but I might as well go ahead and ask what lies ahead in this arena. It seems to me there's every chance we could do away with ourselves very easily with something like this.
Well, I could say a number of things about that, starting with... When you make a new organism, it isn't, remember, it's alien. It's on alien turf the moment you aerosolize it and disperse it. So
right,
it's in an alien environment. If it is very viable, then it's still, if it's a biological weapon, it's still susceptible to a lot of problems. Sunlight, for instance, will denature a biological weapon many times, or being exposed to sunlight for more than about 30 minutes or so, depending upon the nature of the weapon. However, if it's a spore, that may not be the case. So we can go on and on about this. The key is, and most civilians don't recognize this, the weaponization, the militarization of a biological weapon is very, very difficult. It is a science. It is not an art. It's a science. It takes a lot... a lot of work and a lot of knowledge. That knowledge is out there, but not with 60 countries, about 30.
About 30?
Mm-hmm.
How many does it take?
Doesn't take much.
You mentioned earlier the next use of a nuclear weapon in anger, so I've got to ask, when is that going to be? Who's going to use it? What do you know?
What we use as a search cue is that we know works, of course, is next. So we were concerned about Lebedev's announcement that the special atomic demolition munitions that the Russians had...
The 100 backpack nukes.
Allegedly, the 100 backpack nukes were missing. We were very concerned about that because the Russian mafia is a very powerful entity. And so what the company did as an initiative project is we targeted the search queue. We used the search queue of next nuclear next nuclear weapon attack, and we qualified that with intent to kill and massive casualties, I believe. I don't have the target folder in front of me, the project folder. We needed to eliminate work against military weapons testing, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
We just put next military, next atomic weapon use or next nuclear weapon use, we would get all kinds of trash, for instance, nuclear weapons tests and those kinds of things. We wanted to look at the use of a weapon in anger.
Understood.
And instead, what we were trying to look at is to see if we could forestall or identify the place where a terrorist would be using a weapon, because that was our notion about how the a weapon would be used.
Sure.
And instead, what we got was a very, very clear picture at the end of a week of the North Koreans using a nuclear weapon, a missile-mounted weapon, against the South Koreans. Now, analytically, we think that this event may occur before the end of the winter. That's analysis.
Before the end of this winter?
Before the end of this winter. I think the so-called peace talks will break down. U.S., as you know, still goes ahead with its winter exercises over there.
Yes.
We augment the already 30,000 Americans with another 20,000.
Right.
And to a starving country whose military is being fed by the Chinese, that is not only provocative, you know, what do you got to lose? The next generation of North Koreans, the South Koreans, may win by default.
Well, yes, but if they were to attack us in the South with a nuclear device, what they would have to lose would be the next generation of North Koreans.
I disagree.
You do?
Yes, I do.
You don't think we would respond massively to such an event?
And where would you respond to? And which way would you be pointing? Anything with a pointed nose would be pointing towards, guess what?
China.
That's right.
So
we'd pull out.
We'd pull out.
Yeah, what would you
respond? Leave the South Koreans to fight their own battles.
It wouldn't be a battle.
In other words,
we'd fight a ground war. We'd fight a ground war for so long. But if we couldn't retaliate with weapons of mass destruction, because you'd be bombing all the military would be piled up on the borders, all you'd have left is skinny civilians up north.
All right. Major Ed Dames, SciTech's Ed Dames, is my guest. When we come back, we're getting close to the discontinuity.
Mom, I can't serve the family holiday dinner on...
To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. That's 1-800-825-5033. Now, here again is Art Bell.
Once again, here I am, and my guest is SciTech's Major Ed Dames, and this is going to be a rough night. So, again, I issue the standard Art Bell warning. A lot of the material you are going to hear tonight, particularly that coming up shortly, is, if you haven't already been disturbed, very, very disturbing. And for that reason, if children are listening, be a parent, get them out of the room. Use your discretion. If this kind of stuff bothers you, no doubt you can find standard political pap up and down the dial, so go elsewhere. We are going to find out this night what the discontinuity is, that which the remote viewers could not see previously. So back to all of that in a moment, and it never fails. I get these timely news stories. I've got one here from the New York Times that I'll read you in a moment.
Nine.
All right, clearing the wire at 5:55 p.m. Eastern Time, almost 9 o'clock here in the West. In the New York Times, it is going to appear later today, the following Associated Press story in part, more than 25 nations have or may be developing nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons and ways to deliver them. Our Defense Secretary, William Cohen, said the threat is neither far-fetched nor far off. That's a quote. He said, the front lines are no longer overseas. Releasing a report that said Americans could fall victim to such an attack because criminal organizations and cults, as well as nation-states, could deploy such weapons. The weapons are, he said, the poor man's atomic bomb, cheaper, easier to produce, and extremely deadly. So there you have it, Ed. That'll be in the New York Times later today. You know, it almost sounds like, and people always say this about things, but I've been listening carefully to the news lately, Ed, and it sounds to me like they are preparing us for something.
I think it's probably Iraq, Art.
Well, you know the real problem. Let's say that somebody managed to actually attack a U.S. city or a water supply or sprayed in the night or whatever they did, and we were attacked. How would we know who attacked us?
You'd have to depend upon intelligence agencies, including the FBI. Internal intelligence. That's the only thing you could do. Of course, as remote viewers, we could track down. You can't run from or hide from this technology, from technical remote viewing, but it just takes a long time. And by the time you identify the culprits or perpetrators, they've moved, and then you only have one intelligence source. That would be TRV telling you that this country over here did that.
Technical,
you need more than
viewing.
One.
Technical remote viewing, that's what you call it.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Art and Ed, this is from Tom in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I'd like to know if remote viewing was used during the Gulf War. Answer is, I can answer that, yes. In particular, he says, though, I heard rumors that remote viewing was used to target a bunker that was thought to be a command and control center, even housing Saddam himself. In fact, it turned out to be housing civilians. And, of course, you'll recall the tragic results were televised by the Iraqis for all the world to see. Ed?
No. If we target Saddam Hussein, we're going to describe the bunker that he is in at the time that we target him. Whether or not the flyboys miss their target is up to them. You know, it's up to what they do with the intelligence. We're not going to give false data or erroneous data to a targeting team.
Mm-hmm.
That was collateral damage, I'm sure.
That's what they.
We just don't target. We don't do that. We don't drop bombs intentionally on civilians. This country is not a totalitarian dictatorship.
Right.
The pre-McCarthy days were dark ages. And
well, I was going to suggest the exceptions of Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
And some unfortunate circumstances in Vietnam too, when hatreds were. We're really flared on both sides, but it is not our policy any longer to do that. These are the 90s, to quip.
Mm-hmm.
Things have changed.
Well, yes. Now we, of course, don't intentionally target them, and when they do occur, we call it collateral damage.
That's correct. But that's a lot different than intentionally attempting. I used to recruit people for Delta Force. I used to recruit young troops for Delta Force, and I had to ask them, Sergeant so-and-so, do you have any qualms about killing civilians? And the answer was, no, sir. Well, that was part of the answer that I needed, believe it or not, because you couldn't have a person put a bullet through a civilian mistakenly and then have them try to, you know...
How many answered the wrong way?
A few. And that's not to say that the people that go into Delta are unethical or immoral. That's to say that they can live with the idea that they've accidentally killed a non-combatant.
Mm-hmm. So. No, that really is an important question, living with it, because a lot of people who have been involved in combat, period, can't live with it and get this delayed stress disorder.
I don't think I could. In fact, if I could, I would have done other things, but I don't believe that I could do that. I'm not that strong, I guess. Speaking of that, I think I'm going to loosen up tonight because this may be my last program with you. So,
oh no,
it'll be a while if I.
I hope it's not going to be one of my last programs.
No, it won't be. But it may be one of my last programs with you. So I'm going to loosen up a little bit more than I have.
All right. Well, that's good, I guess. I know, again, under your personal history, you listed ominously Beverly Hills as your location for one more month. And I asked you about that prior to the show, and you said, I'm packing now.
That's correct.
You're packing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I told you I would last year.
I know. And so you're going to be gone, and you're going to...
Polynesia.
I beg your pardon?
Polynesia. That's where Project Starman is centered for. Most of my work now will be on the Internet, teaching technical remote viewing. I'm there part of everyday teaching. And all of our work will be centered on Project Starman.
Rough place to go, Polynesia. Project Starman is an effort to establish contact with others, correct?
It deals with contact, and it deals with post-global cataclysmic reconstruction.
Post-global cataclysmic reconstruction. Uh-oh, here we go. All right. There was... And you've been telling me this. How long have you and I been doing interviews now? For two, 3 years, something like
that?
No,
it hasn't been that long.
Seems like that.
Long. In fact, the predictive work that we've done began last year. And I said that in 1997, you'd have a few things happening. The weather, frogs, mutations.
Oh, yeah, you hit all those.
Jet stream dropping down.
Yep.
Seabirds dying as harbingers of dying oceans. Those kinds of things that could be predicted if one really had their finger on the pulse of global ecology.
Yeah, if people went back to the first shows we did, there is no question about it. You predicted every one of those things, and they've all come true.
But I told you that 1998 might be a hellraiser, and it's going to be.
Well, there was... You and I have talked many times about this sort of brick wall that remote viewers that you and others have run into, a point that you couldn't read and that you couldn't understand and that you called it a discontinuity, for lack of a better word. You at one time said it might be some sort of spiritual or religious event, that it could be some sort of catastrophic event, but whatever it was, when you tried to look at it, what did you see? Simply nothing?
When we as viewers attempted to discern this point in time, what was happening, all we could produce in terms of data were that the surroundings, the surface of the Earth, was very, very barren, and whatever this was, it happened to the entire Earth at once and to all people. But what it was, we couldn't discern. And now we understand why. Because whatever it is, it kills you. And in a fashion that we did not understand. We thought our perceptions, the moment that this event occurs, and we're remote viewing through time to this point, and I'll tell you the timelines later, we're picking up the idea that if our physical selves were standing on the surface of the Earth and this event occurred,
mm-hmm.
something would happen to us that we had no experience in whatsoever. I've talked about this before. I could not discern what would be happening to my body if I were at that point in time and in space. I postulated the possibility of a geophysical event, which we finally decided upon. For a while there, we thought it was esoteric or spiritual. We thought we were lifted up to another dimension or something like that. In fact,
sure.
We are. We're dead.
Well,
dead as a doornail.
That is ascension.
Yes, it is.
At least we hope.
And then further work, it was disturbing because the timelines indicated that it was very close indeed. And I thought it would be nice if it weren't on my watch, if it were way out there in the future.
Oh, I hear you.
For my kids or grandkids to worry about. But it turns out that it's right around the corner. So there was a sense of urgency in-house to attempt to figure out what this was. And we did pinpoint it down to a geophysical event. Then we had to discern what kind of geophysical event it was. Was it a sudden collapse of Earth's magnetic field? Was it a pole shift, the proverbial a physical pole shift, or was it a shift of the core magma? What were we dealing with?
Yes.
And we finally nailed it down. We cross-checked and double-checked our work, and that's why I'm here tonight, to tell you that we've got it. We know what we're dealing with now, and we know how to protect yourself. We're pretty sure how to protect people if they choose to protect themselves.
How widespread will the effects be? Have you confirmed that it is a complete global event?
We don't have 100% surety on that, but we know it's pretty much global. I can't give you I can't firmly commit that it's in the entire Earth, but it appears to be my best judgment at this juncture, that it appears to affect the entire surface of the Earth.
Now, you
or at least about 3/4 of the exposed surface of the Earth. I'll get to what I mean.
That's
exposed
quite a bit. You did earn the name or the nickname Dr. Doom from some of your colleagues
in both NCIA at White House and in other small circles in the intelligence community. Yes.
Why did you get that nickname?
I always delivered a message that people didn't want to hear, either at the White House or in the hallowed halls of the Pentagon or in other places.
But one has to imagine that, particularly in the military program, your earned nickname was kind of unfair, because the other remote viewers should have been seeing the same things.
That name was given to me prior to my being assigned to the remote viewing unit. It was used when I was a targeting officer at celestial levels of intelligence.
Was this because you intentionally targeted these kinds of things and questions, or simply because you talked about them as opposed to the others who knew the same damn things and just didn't talk about them or avoided even trying to remote view them?
No, in some cases I and my colleagues penetrated them, and in other cases we watched for them, because in all cases they were weapons of mass destruction. But we weren't talking megatons and throwaways. We were talking about very exotic things that kill in very exotic ways. It's one thing to tell someone that this weapon may vaporize you in a couple of milliseconds or a picosecond. It's quite another thing to say that if you're exposed to this particular weapon, you will have Indian cobra venom being produced in your stomach in a matter of 2 hours by a genetically engineered E. coli. That's another thing.
Oh, brother.
So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. And I had to give a heads up to this country's leaders, both our military and civilian leaders, on Capitol Hill and other places, to let them know that other countries were thinking along those lines, and some were actually doing it. And so those were my kinds of targets, the sexy stuff.
All right. I've got, by the way, late news tonight. I don't know if you happen to catch the first hour of the show tonight, but researchers in Duluth have now linked UV radiation to the frog deformities that you predicted long ago. And for a while, the scientists huffed and puffed and said, nah, it's not UV, it's some sort of spore or some sort of something or another from snakes, something, maybe pollution. But they've nailed it down, and in Duluth they have proven, and by duplication, which is science, that exposure to UV radiation produces precisely the deformities that they're now seeing, unfortunately, all over the place.
Which is what I remote viewed a year ago, and I told you that it was a UV, and anything exposed to that degree of UV from an ever-thinning ozone layer in its developing stages will be mutated or killed. We're seeing it in the oceans as well as in the limnological sense in freshwater.
Well, hysteria in the oceans, now the North Sea. Now, there was a big, big story about a sperm decline. Now, that would get us right there. If sperm counts ever went to zero, it's all academic, isn't it?
We have to remake ourselves, in other words.
So, but that's happening. I mean, the big story came out that the sperm counts were drastically being reduced. Then another study came out and said study one was baloney, and they're as they always were. And now a third study says it's even worse than we thought.
Yes. And as we mentioned last year, bovine AIDS finally is rearing its ugly head, and babies will begin dying of diseases, and diseases will result in a global economic collapse in spring or early summer at the latest.
Really?
98. Yes, and we mentioned that too. That was one of the big hallmarks of 98.
Will Asia have anything to do with this? I mean, what's been going on recently in Asia is astounding. We all thought the Japanese economy was so sound, even too sound for us, and yet banks are collapsing, financial institutions are in trouble, stock markets in Asia are plummeting, and most of Asia, it's kind of like dominoes, is in big financial trouble, and we're talking about an IMF, International Monetary Fund bailout of Asia.
Yeah, it's a house of cards. Or minimally, there's no more stilts underneath us. It's coming down.
Well, we are now part of that house.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about it. The markets react to each other. So
that's why I said global economic collapse
in 98.
In early 98, at the latest, early summer. Late spring, early summer at the latest. So we can only get these ballpark figures. We can describe the events, but knowing where we are in time as remote viewers is a very tricky thing, and you better be expert when you do it. Even when you know those techniques, you have to be very, very careful and run that target many times and get identifying characteristics to bracket yourself in time. It's tricky.
All right. Hold tight, Ed. When we come back, we will nail down specifically what this discontinuity is, and Ed said he had timelines as well, so that's coming up. By the way, my own personal weapon of mass destruction, our new dog. I have a dog. Can you believe that? Never in a million years would I thought I would have had a dog, but she came to me. Keith Rowland took some photographs of her. They're up on the website. Nobody has really nailed down what she is. I want to know what kind of dog this is. It's a wrinkled dog, I know that. She's kind of ugly, but she's kind of cute. She's certainly friendly, but she has big jaws, kind of looks like part pit bull or something. I wish somebody would go up to my website, take a look, tell me exactly what kind of dog that is when we come back. Ed Dames, more of Ed Dames, and the discontinuity.
Trees of green.
For a while.
Red roses, I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
This is Coast to Coast AM from the high desert. Stay right where you are.
I see skies of blue.
Talk with Art Bell from west of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico. Dial 1-800-618-8255. That's 1-800-618-8255. Now again, here's Art.
Well, here again I am. Mark writes,
Art, get to the point.
Ask him point blank what's the event. You waste a lot of time with these delaying tactics. Your biggest fault as an interviewer. Let the man speak. Actually, I thought it was one of my assets. I mean, you don't do as many shows with Richard C. Hoagland as I have done without learning something. Yeah. All right, we're about to get to it. The Beijing Free Play Radio. And now here's an item that you should have for the discontinuity or anything of even a lesser importance. And I can't think of anything you could give somebody for Christmas in your family. You know, maybe two, three, four children, whatever you've got, scattered around the country the way they are these days. It is the perfect gift for Christmas. And I mean perfect. A free play radio. It's got a mechanism inside called the Bayless Clockwork Generator. On the outside, there is a crank. You turn this crank with human power for 30 seconds, and this full-size portable radio plays at full room volume for 30 minutes. No batteries, no plug into the wall, no sunshine required. So in other words, if it's storming out there, this radio will always let you know what's going on when the power goes out. What better present could you possibly give to your children or your parents than a Beijing radio? I'm serious about this. Again, it's 7 pounds in weight, so it's a full-size portable, built like a tank in South Africa. It was designed by Trevor Bayliss in Great Britain. And here's the Christmas deal until they're gone. You buy one Beijing, we'll deliver it to your door for $119.95. You buy two Beijing radios, you and a friend maybe, they're just $109.95. And if you buy three or more Beijing radios, the price drops to $99.95 each. Moreover, the Seagrain Company will gift wrap. When you buy three or more, you'll find them coming gift wrapped to you. So you and your family can feel better with a Beijing, and you do feel better. You know, even if you don't use it every day, which you can, and just keep it in the closet, you feel better when you've got one. What a great Christmas gift. Call the Seagrain Company at 7:30 a.m. in the morning at 1-800-522-8863. 1-800-522-8863. The Seagrain Company.
In today's...
The serious part is coming up. We are going to discuss the nature of the discontinuity, and it is going to disturb many people. If you're one of them, turn away. Go listen to something else. Get the children out of the room. Blah, blah, blah. Because, I suppose, unless you can think of some cool way to delay it just a little longer, Ed, we're going to have to tell them.
Yeah, it is going to frighten a lot of people, anger a lot of people. It'll be laughed off by those who just view your program merely as entertainment, and it is entertaining. But it may save a number of lives, too, and that's why I'm doing this.
My program is no single thing ever, Ed. It ranges from the serious to the bizarre to the funny to the whatever it is I feel like doing that night. And so people, different nights, have different comments about my program. I refuse to be put in any single niche. And sometimes it's entertaining. Now, sometimes it's damn scary, too. And this is, I guess, one of those times. What's going to happen?
A very massive solar event. A historically unprecedented solar event. Probably an extremely large flare of tremendous proportions.
Mm.
Going to produce radiation, X-ray and gamma, and I don't know about protons or anything else. It's a complex event. It'll be a storm the likes of which we've never seen before, at least in the last 12,000 years. And it will eradicate or erase most of the living things on the surface of the Earth.
Oh, my God.
And there's more. It is right around the corner, Art. That's why I'm saying this. I'm going to have to dig in soon, and I'll tell you what that means.
I really don't like it when my own Oprah program scares me. It's been doing that lately because we have had a number of guests, Ed, who have said roughly the same thing, that we are now, and this is true, of course, we are entering solar cycle 23, and we are in, scientists now believe, what's called the rapid ascension phase of solar cycle 23. We have already had a number of ejecta. We've had a number of X-class flares, which are the largest there are. And no matter what a caller argued with me yesterday, I've got several articles here from scientists that believe this is going to be the largest solar active solar cycle in recorded history. I mean, this is mainstream science that's beginning to say this, Ed.
Well, it looks like there's going to be a precursor event, and this, I'm going to talk about timelines in a minute and a number of other things associated with this, and it is scary. It is very scary. The precursor event is going to be sort of a shot across the bow, and it's very easy to see why religionists, people like Malachi Martin and others, talk about this in a religious sense, because it is a predictable thing. In terms of the collective unconscious. In fact, people will begin massively to have dreams about these kinds of things as this huge event comes up over the horizon. But that
would be the intuitive part of all of us, I guess, huh?
That's correct. Well, SciTech doesn't have any monopoly on that kind of truth. We only have a monopoly on the accuracy and the precision, at least right now. After the tapes are out in about 4 months studied, that'll be different.
What would be the nature of the precursor?
The precursor will be a smaller flare, and we'll have several days' notice on that one, but it'll maybe a couple days. It'll still catch us by surprise, and it will be a very minor version of what's to come in what we think 99. Now, the event in 99 that's the best that SciTech can do. We think that around April-ish, around Easter of 1999 is when the death blow is struck, and that the precursor event may come as early as next month.
Next month?
Possibly as early as next month.
So that's why you are now packing.
That would be the precursor. That's correct. And then what the precursor may do is if you're outside and you're looking up, you do not listen to the warnings of meteorologists and astronomers who say, hey, there's a massive solar flare coming, we're not sure how big it is, it may interrupt radio transmission, blah, blah, blah. If you happen to be looking up and the interaction with the atmosphere, 150 miles of atmosphere, may be such that it would blind you, but you're going to feel it in terms of either heat or light optically. We think that the precursor event may be in December, and that the big one may be in April of 99. It is possible, though, that the 99 event may be the precursor. I am not taking any chances. I'm digging in 98.
Well, obviously, you're going to now be able to tell us how one might prepare oneself for this, for any of the events you predict to be coming.
Well, this one in particular, all the other things that will be happening in terms of vermin and particularly disease, those kinds of things, at least we stand a pretty good fighting chance with. Our bodies can still strike back if our immune systems are healthy enough, and people know how to do that instinctively. But this one, which does appear to be cyclic, and I'm going to go out on a limb, and then later on in the program I'm going to cut the limb off. You'll see what I mean by that.
Okay.
What we did with this discontinuity, when we were remote viewing the out years past the event that we heretofore did not understand,
right,
we saw that there were survivors, humans who were living underground.
That's
humans
right.
Humans were coming right. out, right. and they were going in a very barren environment.
That's right.
They were going back down. That's how we discovered the chlorella vats.
Right. I remember you saying that. Of course I remember you saying that. Humans would have to be living underground.
That's right. And we assumed that it was because of long-term ozone destruction. We did not know that it was mostly because of this sledgehammer effect of this radiation hitting Earth, X-rays and gamma rays minimally.
All right. Interestingly, I'm sorrowfully having to repeat something I've had over the last couple of weeks when we've had guests who have talked about what's going on with the sun, and that is that the Israeli scientists recently concluded that there was no KT event, or if there was, the KT event is not what killed the dinosaurs. What killed them was our sun. In an event just like you're describing right now. I mean, mainstream Israeli scientists believe this.
Very interesting. Well, it's nice to have collaboration, but we're willing, at least in SciTech, to act on the information we know here. And let me, as an aside, it is very difficult for us as experts to convince our loved ones, even our children, that this is not millennial madness, that we are not crazy, although they've seen the work that we've done militarily and the police work. This is a real hard sell. And that's one of the reasons why I think the precursor event is at least a good thing, because it will scare people a whole lot more than I'm scaring them now, or at least your listening audience.
All right, and you think the precursor event may be as early as 1 month, and that there will be, of course, we know when an event occurs on the sun, when there's ejecta, when there's a gigantic flare.
Correct.
We get notification of that. Matter of fact, we've got a satellite up there, SOHO now, that that looks for these events.
I'm going to put some of the best websites that I have found, the very best. I'm going to link those on my own website, on SciTech's own website, in the next week, so people can monitor those for themselves and they don't have to go through a middleman.
Okay. By the way, folks, we've got a link to Ed Dame's website right now on our website, www.artbell.com. Go down, scroll down to the guest area, and click on Ed Dame's name, Major Ed Dames, and you will go to his site, the SciTech website. And have you posted this on your site yet?
No, I have not.
So they're just hearing about this for the first time.
They are. I didn't want to scare people prematurely and have them, you know, take it out of context. And there are individuals in the chat room now, both graduates, instructors, and trainees, tape trainees there on the website. So it's an active website, 24 hours a day. I teach in the on the bulletin board in that website about 4 hours a day. So people need to learn this, and they need to learn technical remote viewing for one good reason.
All right.
They need to learn it. They need to put it to the test. They first have to go through the, oh, my God, it's real experience for themselves.
Sure.
The only people you can really trust are yourself and God. And when you put this to the test on something that's important, only then will you be convinced that the information is credible enough that people who are saying what I'm saying now can be believed and are credible. Because TRV is incredible enough. But this is way out on a limb.
The event that may be a month off, Ed, other than not looking at the sun when we are bombarded with the radiation, and by the way, you should try and explain to me if you're able, there are two forms with what I know about, for example, a gigantic flare. One form of energy hits us within a very, very short period of time, speed of light. And then there's a secondary form of energy that slams into the Earth's upper atmosphere several days later, generally. Which event is the one that is more significant for biological folks?
Art, because I think that this particular event, there are very few X-rays that hit the surface of the planet, hard X-rays. And there's very, very few gamma rays from our own sun that hit the surface of the Earth. But we think that those might be the things that are doing the controlled burn of the planet. But I am not sure. I don't know enough about solar physics. All I know is that it is going to be our sun. I don't think I have to study solar physics anymore. But I do need to know how deep we have to be to protect ourselves against the big one, and that is what SciTech is working on now. We're actually remote viewing the future to look at how deep the survivors are during that event.
All right, how about the first event? Would a house protect one? In other words, if you're indoors, would that be sufficient protection for the first event, do you think?
Art, I don't know. I just don't know. I know that we'll feel it. I know that it'll be an experience that everybody will unequivocally understand, but I just can't give you the physical parameters of it right now.
All right,
now.
Here's another one then for you, Ed. When this occurs, I think it is true that the side of the Earth facing the sun, when it is struck, is the one that is affected. Now, obviously, it could atmospherically, I suppose, affect the entire planet. But generally, the whoosh, boom of these particles slamming into the Earth would affect the side facing the sun when the particles arrive.
That's correct, but you still have a spray effect. So it's spraying the planet rather than hitting, slamming. Yes, it does slam into the planet on the day side, but it's also a spray. So as the planet turns and the sun rises, that spray comes out over the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And it's being sprayed with radiation. Interesting that the moon has only a always points toward the sun. There's always a dark side.
Tremendous aurora borealis, I would think, associated with it.
I can only assume, Art, that solar physics are something that I am just not familiar with, and there's plenty of other people that can do that, and the links that I'll post on our company's website will have the names of the best in the world up there. I've spent the last several days finding the very best warning sites for something like this, the very best, sorting through about 30 of them, and I'll post those as links.
Okay.
You'll actually see the sun in seven or eight different spectra.
I can only conclude that the second event, that homes, houses, structures would simply not be sufficient to protect one.
No, nothing. I think, I mean, if it were simply X-rays and gamma rays, if you were in a basement in a deep building or a fallout shelter, when we find out how deep one would have to be, if that's deep enough, you still have to come back out. If this event lasts for 3 or 4 days or more, then you're not going to want to come out of that basement. So you're going to have
You remember Father Malachi's prediction of 3 days of darkness?
I do, and I think that may be because of this dust being lifted up. The weather effects in something like this would be tremendous worldwide. There would be a lot of dust in the air. It might even cause volcanism to some degree. I don't know. I do know that survivors, in order to survive, you're going to have to be deep. And that means that there's radiation involved. It's not just winds or something else like that. It's radiation. Probably X-rays or gamma rays, but it could be other things. It could be protons. All we're going to do is make it simple on ourselves in terms of understanding how to survive by remote viewing the depth at which the survivors are.
I am not a physicist, although I interview some, and it is my understanding that our magnetic field protects us from the effects, the more damaging effects of the sun. Now, is there anything you can tell us about the magnetic field that is associated with this, with these sun eruptions?
Not much, other than I know that it protects us from some extrasolar cosmic rays. It acts as a buffer for combines with the sun's own magnetic field and Earth's magnetic field and protects us somewhat. But this event, this unprecedented event, which appears to be cyclic, and it appears to be so big, I don't know if even those versed in solar physics would be able to take all the permutations and put them together and say, well, we know that this is going to affect the Earth in this way.
So the discontinuity then will eliminate the majority of life on Earth?
Yes. For a while. It will sterilize the garden.
It'll be virtually instantaneous.
I don't know if that's sure. I mean, for sure, if it's virtually instantaneous. It may be over a couple-day period. If any biological systems would be subject to radiation damage to the point where they would undergo stasis, so you'd have minimally a lot of corpses, a lot of decay after several days, a lot of things dying.
Okay, and we have been warned at previous times. In fact, CNN ran a big story, all the networks did, on a gigantic sun ejector that missed the Earth. This was, I don't know, a couple of months ago. And can you tell us anything about the nature of this first one? Because a lot of us are going to be looking for what you're talking about and deciding whether to act based on whether, you know, what you say about the precursor occurs.
I think the precursor, my best guess is that, and it's only a guess, is that it is a big solar flare, and it heads our way, and there are ways that solar physicists have, they understand all of the signatures for something that would develop into a solar flare that would be directed towards Earth.
All right. Hold it right there. We're at the top of the hour. We'll break here, and when we come back, we'll try to get to the phone lines. My guest is SciTech's Major Ed Dames. 1 month, huh? I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Stay right where you are. Don't touch that dial.
Calls on the wild card line at area code 702-727-1295. That's area code 702-727-1295. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and again, obviously I'm issuing the warning that this really is very, very serious, disturbing material being presented tonight. If you can't handle it, tune away. If you have children in the room, get them out. I just got the following letter. Hi, Art. We've always had the feeling that the events Major Ed Dames has described will come to pass. These huge solar events will cause another polar shift to occur, and we puny human beings are going to have to start all over again, just as we've done every 10,000 years or so. No need to be afraid, Art. We mortals have always known that we're not going to leave this Earth alive. Major Dames is merely stating that we're going to be recycled in a more interesting method than previously believed. Truth from the mouths of babes. I asked my 11-year-old son recently if he felt it was true that we are living in the final days. I also asked him if he felt there would be any signs of the forthcoming event. Being an avid Nintendo game player, he quickly answered the Almighty would simply arrange the clouds in the sky to read, "Game over." Listen, Christmas is coming, and I'm sure you have at least one or two already I've got everything kind of people on your Christmas list. Well, in all likelihood, anyway. They don't own or have a star named after them. Tom Cruise. I know it sounds like a joke, but it is a star named for $45. Actually, you can get a star named after anybody you wish. Just call International Star Registry at 1-800-282-3333, and they'll send a beautiful, and it really is beautiful, full-color parchment certificate of record, sky charts to help locate the star, and a fascinating booklet on astronomy. The new star name is entered in the registry's book and recorded with the U.S. Copyright Office. So you can really get a star named after you. For more information, call toll-free 1-800-282-3333. That's 1-800-282-3333. This year, give a gift that's truly out of this world. Now, if my dear wife is listening in the other room, and she is awake, she wanted to know, like everybody else, what this discontinuity was, if she would be kind enough to bring my certificate and my location of my star, I will put it on my cam, on my studio cam, so you can see it. It is pretty cool. Then one more thing, particularly if our months are limited, I suspect that if you arrive at the Pearlies, if you get that far, in all likelihood, the good things that you have done in your life are going to be in the credit column. I mean, you know how that works. And I consider one of the good things to do in life to be sending flowers to somebody. Absolutely fresh flowers is the best deal in flowers in the whole world. They sell flowers wholesale to the American public directly from a flower farm. The price is $42.95. The delivery is Magungus in this great big triangular box with more flowers than you can imagine. And inside there, there's a card from you with a handwritten message. I said handwritten. Who does that kind of work anymore? With your message and your name, all inside, and then delivery, and that's all part of the price. Call them. It's a good thing to do. The number is 1-800-562-6438. I try to do it slowly so you can write it. 1-800-562-6438. Absolutely fresh flowers.
Are you over?
All right. Actually, I'm going to hold up my International Star Registry frame. It comes in, it's really beautiful. It comes in a frame, and I guess I'm going to try to get a picture of it here shortly. It's a beautiful frame, and I'm going to hold that up and try to get a good photograph of it. It's all signed and sealed and all that. And then I will hold up the location where my actual star is. So I'll try and do both. Here is, once again, Major Ed Dames. Well, Ed, you've really outdone yourself this time.
Yeah, I've gone way out on a limb. I'm going to saw the limb off in a moment. But before I do, some technical things. These locations that are... one thing that we do know about the locations where survivors are, they need to be near sea level because of oxygen requirements. A lot of this going, even during the first shot, there's a possibility that they'll be a little bit less oxygen for a while than what we're normally used to, and those effects will be exacerbated at higher altitudes. So being close to sea level will help out.
So in other words, you wouldn't be moving to Denver.
You wouldn't be moving to Denver, or if you were somewhere where there were caves, the caves should not be at high altitudes to protect you from, let's say, gamma. Let's hypothetically say gamma, well, not hypothetically, probably gamma rays and X-rays. If you're in a cave, a granite cave, that's fine unless you're at 10,000 feet. Then there may not be a lot of oxygen for other reasons that we don't quite understand right now. It could be because there's nothing to produce oxygen after this hits, the big one hits, and you're going to need to be down low to the ground, so to speak, just like you would in a fire.
Great. So out here where I am in the middle of the desert, the high desert, where we have a lot of sun, where it gets very hot, where we have a lot of sun exposure, not your prime area to move to.
Probably not. I don't know what kind of caves you have there. You know, how far away are Carl's Bear Caverns or Yucca Flats? Go down in there with the...
well, I'm not sure you'd want to... I mean, climbing down into the caves in Yucca Flats would be probably just as bad as staying above ground.
Yes, in fact, it's one of the things that we're concerned about in-house. We think we know how the problem is solved, but there's going to be a lot of, when this 2x4 hits Earth, a lot of everything that's a reactor or everything that's a weapon is going to be dropped in its place. So there's a lot of damaging radiation out there. However, there's something else that we see out on the horizon that may ameliorate those conditions.
Whoa, really?
In terms of other technologies that don't necessarily belong to us right now at this time.
Is this where you're going to saw off the limb?
Sort of. I'm sawing off the limb because I'm saying that, as you know, this plant pathogen that we're predicting actually impacts in Africa sometime between December and February.
Yes.
Now, we've already stated that that this is an intelligent agency that is delivering this.
I recall, yes.
I'm also stating that it appears that this so-called cycle that the sun, this very immense flare, appears to also be in some way engineered. That it is indeed a cycle, but it is an engineered cycle.
Intelligence is behind it somewhere.
Yes.
Well, you know, a funny thing, Ed. I didn't think, you know, we've all heard stories of weather control, that the weather could be controlled, and people have always poo-pooed it. Until along comes this Reuters article the other day indicating that Russia has made an offer to Malaysia to create a cyclone I said, create a cyclone from a satellite that they now have in space. They've offered to do this, at least create the first one, for free. Now, a cyclone is just another way of saying a hurricane. You know, over on that side, it's called a cyclone or typhoon. And the Russians are making an absolute claim that they will do this for Malaysia. Malaysia has graciously accepted their offer to clear away some of the incredible smoke that's been hanging over that part of Asia, choking people. And, you know, I am, I guess, not surprised that the Russians are saying they have this. If they have it, Ed, we've got it. And now I realize you're suggesting the intelligence you're talking about is not ours. But if we can do that, who knows what we can do?
Back to survival things again. We're talking possibly existing fallout shelters, although we'll have to dust them off. Transportation tunnels and mines, caves, caverns. And we don't know how long we have to be in those and what we face when we come back up. But one thing is certain. If you do survive whatever hits, you're going to have to come back up with seed stocks. And I don't know how long it will be before we can replant. So that means we have to have food and water in those shelters.
All of this is consistent with what you've said before.
Well, what I've said before was predicated upon the weather pattern, the immense, and they're going to get bigger, Art. The cyclones are going to get bigger. We remote viewed one in the Midwest that's coming that is so big, it scared the bejesus out of you. It has so much force that when it hits a human being, it rips the human being apart because the differential in pressures from the head to the toe are so great, it literally rips the human apart.
Do you mean cyclone or do you mean tornado?
I mean tornado.
Tornado.
Yes.
Okay, great.
So, but that is why we talked about having shelters that were deep. This puts a whole new spin. This discontinuity puts a whole new spin on things.
Here's one thing I think we should really cover. Again, Father Malachi Martin, 3 days of darkness. The discontinuity. When you did not know what it was, Major, you said it might be a spiritual or religious event. You sort of nailed down for us tonight what the actual physical event or geophysical event is going to be. But you know what? That still doesn't really rule out the possibility of it also being at the same time a spiritual event or orchestrated by what we regard as God. And again, referring to this fact sent to me by the father of the 11-year-old who said, the Almighty will simply arrange clouds in the sky to read game over, the view of one who plays a lot of Nintendo. But that says it pretty clearly, and so you cannot rule out, can you, the possibility that this is, that you've nailed down with remote viewing the geophysical event, but you can't rule out the fact that it's connected to what Father Malachi Martin speaks of?
I don't know if, I'm suggesting that there's an intelligent agency that is in it for the long term, probably whoever planted us here in the first place.
Well, many will read that as extraterrestrial, which it could be, I guess.
It could very well be. I mean, it's certainly terrestrial as well as extraterrestrial.
Others may read it as God.
That's correct. Whatever it is, for us puny humans, those are the effects down here where the rubber meets the road. And I am a spiritual man, and I think that in technical remote viewing, when we have these controlled revelations that we have, I think that we're dipping into a unitary mind, that mind is unitary throughout the universe, and spirit's in there too. So it's a way of a kind of an indirect pathway back to spirituality, and at least via mind.
Sure.
At any rate, having said all that, Is this a natural cycle that humans are construing as something connected with their God, something spiritual?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it, in fact, something spiritual that manifests itself as these cataclysms? Or is it both? You know, where are we in the grand scheme of things?
whatever the case may be, the gardener is coming back to till the soil, and this planet is going to go fallow for a while, and then it's going to be replanted, and I guess we'll start all over again.
The proverbial reset button.
The defrag and reboot. And there'll be a few people left, though, to start this process rolling again. And I think that's why there's a lot of ambiguity and confusion in the records. Our records stretch back to maybe 9,000 years ago, but that if we're saying this event may be 10 to 12,000 years in its cycle, in its periodicity. And our records just don't go quite back that far, and so a lot of information is lost.
All right.
Except geologically.
Sure. Some phone calls. We must. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, Major. Hi, Art. How you doing?
All right. Well, I mean, you're listening. Where are you?
I am in Iowa. My name is Dan.
Okay, Dan.
And I design and build earth sheltered homes.
Opportunistic call, huh?
No, sir, not at all. I'm looking at building one for myself here. What we're looking at, or what I was on the decontamination team in the Air Force for decon.
Yes.
And I've gone through some pretty extensive training with radiation and EMF pulse and things like this.
Right.
And with what the major is talking about here, a standard shelter that we're looking at 25 or 30 feet below the surface, I don't think will hold up to the Rankins.
I don't either. We're looking at survivors at least through time, and the techniques that we use, which are accurate, that are pretty deep, that are pretty deep indeed.
You know, something I've got to ask the both of you right now, if this is really going to happen, and I don't mean to be flippant, but I might be one of the ones who will just go outside and say,
take me.
Yeah, something like that. In other words, if we're left with a world where people have to be 100 damn feet underground to live and generally won't be able to come up for some period of time, what kind of world is that?
Well, Art, the biblical sense in Revelations, the first couple of chapters, state basically, or at least my interpretation of them, indicates is that the Bible is telling us that we should protect ourselves. We should. He's warning us. He's actually saying, protect yourselves, and you're gonna suffer for a while. And when you come back up from whatever it is, if you make your way through it, things will be better. But he's actually saying, do something about it. Protect yourselves, dummy.
Were you surprised at what the major had to say tonight?
Absolutely not. And I think he's right on the money, to be honest with you. I'm just, I'm sad that it's going to be so soon because I didn't put things together soon enough for my family and other loved ones. But I have the technology to protect myself. I mean, it can be done. And if people would just work together and come together, a show like yours, Art, is a godsend in itself, to where you can at least get people together. I've been in contact with Stan quite a bit.
Stan Dale.
Yes, and gone over through quite a few things with him and some of the other group that's there with Noah's Ark. And the major, I wish you were 24 more months off.
I don't know if I'm not. Like I say, we don't know if the 99 event is the precursor or the big one. I'm going to plan as if it's the big one in order to protect myself and my family.
Well, I really am thankful that there are people out there that are paying attention. And Art, again, I love your show, and I hope that somewhere along the line, as things come back up, I hope you don't stand outside, because we do need a presence, somebody that can ask the questions, do the things, and keep the people together. And you're doing a very wonderful job with that.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, Major. I want to give you an opportunity to. There are three modules. I think that's correct. Some time ago, not very long ago, I guess when you sort of knew all this was coming, you decided to release to the public the full training course to remote view. And I know that module one has got to be in just about everybody's hands. For a while, people emailed me and bitched that they weren't getting their modules. But I know that you got them out, because I'm not getting those bitches anymore.
6,000 of them, Mark.
6,000, huh? And module two is due to come out when?
The end of the first week in December, and shipping the second week in four-tape set, and that's about 7 hours of instruction for a total of around 8+ hours of instruction. That's going to take you about 4 months to master. And what I want people to do with that when they get those techniques down, I would like them to turn their attention to sanctuaries. They're just sanctuaries, so that they can describe sanctuaries where they can survive.
Well, that makes sense. If somebody wants to order Module 1 or the upcoming Module 2, how can they do it?
They can call our business numbers just like any other business. There's 800 numbers.
Right.
Do you want those?
Yeah, of course.
For the continental U.S. and Hawaii, it's 1-800-556-0391.
Is that a 24-hour number?
Yeah, it's a 24-hour number. And the other 24-hour number for Canada and Alaska is 1-888-878-0333.
Okay, that's for Canada and Alaska?
Yes, or they can go to our website or mail us. Our website is www.trv-scitech.com. And SciTech is spelled P-S-I-T-E-C-H.
Okay. And let me give out those numbers again. In the U.S., Save Alaska, it's 1-800-556-0391. Canada and Alaska, 1-888-878-0333. And when we come back, we're going to bear in on the lines, on the phone calls. So stay right where you are. I'm Art Bell, and of course, this is Coast to Coast AM.
You look at me like maybe I'm an angel underneath, innocent and sweet. Yesterday I cried, must have been relieved to see the softer side. I can understand how you'd be so confused. I don't envy you, I'm a little bit of everything. All rolled into one, I'm a bitch. I'm a lover, I'm a child, I'm a mother, I'm a sinner, I'm a saint. I do not feel ashamed, I'm your help, I'm your dream. I'm nothing in between, you know you wouldn't want it any other way.
Art Bell is taking your calls in the Kingdom of Nye from east of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, at 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. That's 702-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now here again is Art.
Guess not. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM with Major Ed Dames, SciTech's Ed Dames, as a guest, and we are going to bore in on the phones this hour. Stores everywhere.
Indeed.
All right. I've got that photograph on my live studio cam. If you go to my website and click on the studio cam, you'll see the Star Registry frame. It's a great big thing. I mean, it's probably like 16 by 20 or something. Big. I've also got in front of me, somebody just refaxed it again from the Washington Post. I guess you can check this out if you want at WashingtonPost.com. Associated Press story with regard to Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur. Anxious to clear its skies, Malaysia will try Russian technology touted to create cyclones that chase away haze. The state-owned Russian company, state-owned, yeah, right, has promised that the first demonstration will be free. Malaysia says, quote, since it doesn't cost us anything, there is no harm in allowing them to demonstrate it to us. Skies from Thailand to Australia have been clogged with thick haze for 4 months now, endangering the health of millions. The Russians claim they have a satellite that can do this, and they're about to try it. And no, it does not come under the treaty that bars weather modification because Malaysia is allowing it. With regard to the Major's presentation tonight, Daryl in L.A. says, Art, quick note, for what it's worth, I'm listening like a hawk for speech patterns and other indicators with respect to Ed Dames. This, and my gut tells me, he is convinced of what he speaks and is demonstrating the attended stress. Major Dames, how much chance is there that you could be wrong?
As far as I'm concerned, zero.
It's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's going to get in the way.
No. It will happen as much as the ozone layer will dissipate and we'll be overcome by diseases because we can't get our act together. It's almost like it's a destiny, Art.
Uh-huh. Somebody my age, 52, John, is asking, do you think the submarine service might take me back sea level? How about below it? Ask Ed.
I'm going below it.
So, in other words, he's got the right idea. If you could be way below sea level, even in some sort of submerged vehicle like a submarine, you would be in a good place?
That's correct. I plan upon going below it.
Hmm. All right. One last, and this is kind of an interesting question to ask. Art, please ask Ed, would the Great Pyramid be a good place to be to ride this out?
Inside?
Yeah.
That would appear to me to be thick enough. I'd say yes.
Okay. First time caller line, you are on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, where are you?
Oh, I'm from the great city of Las Vegas, Nevada.
All right. Over the hill.
Yeah.
All right.
I have a question. Like it was kind of like with the submarine thing. I'm going to go into the Navy soon. And I decided to join for like all the benefits. But anyway, I've had some dreams though that have told me that it's like great waves and great blizzards that are bound to come through my dreams. And I was wondering what Ed has to say about how close should you be to the sea, or how.
Well, he said sea level, and then we said below sea level, and he said even better. So I guess that's your answer to that. With respect to dreams, Ed, when would you suspect that people will begin to have these mass dreams of this event?
Now.
Now?
Now. Uh-huh.
Okay. Wild card line, you're on the air with Ed Dames. Hello.
Hi, this is Mark in San Diego.
Hi, Mark.
Truly fascinating, as always, with Ed Dames.
Mm.
My girlfriend just woke up and asked me if we should be in the horizontal or vertical position during this.
Actually, that's a pretty good question. I would think that your exposure, I mean, if I'm just, it would be considerably less if you'd be in the vertical position. It's kind of like if somebody's shooting at you. Do you want to present your full body to them, or do you want to present a profile? The answer is obviously a profile. They've got less of a target.
If it's in the discontinuity itself, I think it's a moot point. But in the so-called warning shot, let's call it that, the precursor event, then it may make a difference, but I don't know how much, Art.
All right. West of the Doma, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with SciTech's Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello.
Where are you?
I am in West Virginia.
Okay.
First of all, I am a first-time caller.
Yes, sir.
I've been listening for about a month. Art, your show's really, really good.
It certainly is different, isn't it?
That's what is majorly interesting to me. I like all the different things that you go through. Ed, the question that I have for you is, since I am in West Virginia, this is coal mine country, obviously. Would coal mines be an adequate place to be during this whole situation?
We think yes.
Okay. Actually, I have another question for you, too. This is along the lines of the viewing that you were talking about. Are you familiar with a gentleman by the name of Courtney Brown?
Absolutely. He was one of my students that I disowned.
And I know I've heard that name somewhere. Courtney Brown.
Okay, what it is I have his book in front of me, Cosmic Voyage.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, he discusses, through his viewing, he talks about alien civilizations and Martians that are going to be visiting the Earth and whatnot. Is that possibly part of the reason why you have disowned him, or?
That's not the reason, no. Not merely because he talks about it, because he has no control on his remote viewing. He removed the controls that I taught him.
For your information, caller, I also disowned him.
Okay, well, I was just wondering about that, you know, as whether, you know, through reading the book, if I can take away that it is worthwhile information, or if it's just kind of just for fun.
Well, it's inaccurate information, according to Ed Dames, right, Ed?
There are parts of it that are accurate, but he's spliced in his own belief system into the raw data, and so you can't pull apart the weft from the wharf anymore. It's just all enmeshed.
Well, he's out of my will. All right, West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames in California. Hello, where are you?
Yeah, this is Scott in Phoenix, Arizona.
All right. Hi, Scott.
Hi. Yeah, Major Ed Dames. I was wondering if you'd done any remote viewing on the Clinton scandals, and if you have, do you think he'll go down?
Huh. you mean prior to or after the discontinuity?
Prior, I guess.
Yeah, well...
It isn't anything, we would not engage in anything that trivial, except as a demonstration, and that would be all, just for a demo to show people how to properly set up a remote viewing queue, a search term.
Now, there have been a number of remote viewing projects that you have undertaken precisely for that reason, to demonstrate to the public that the procedure works, that SciTech works.
But also the pitfalls involved in, we want our students, those who are really interested in learning the techniques, we want to make sure they understand that when they engineer a search term, when they're searching the collective unconscious, something like the next terrorist attack would not work, because it's a meaningless, worthless cue. One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. What's an attack? All those things have to be qualified rigidly. So that's the kind of thing that we teach in SciTech.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning. Where are you, please?
Yeah, hi, this is Dave, and I'm in Gary, Indiana.
Hi, Dave.
Hi. One of your faxers stole my thunder with the pyramids, and I was kind of a two-part question. I was kind of curious. The dating of the pyramids and so forth has been dated as possibly being much older. Could they have been built for this reason?
That is such a good question. Ed, there are many people who believe, and of course we know that these cycles have occurred before, and there are many people who believe that a previous civilization constructed the pyramids specifically to protect against something like this, or to affect something like this. Anything on that?
We haven't remote viewed the purpose of the construction. The only thing that we've done on behalf of a commercial trainee was to look at the concatenation of construction, which edifice was under construction first, mm-hmm. what came next, those kind of things. So we never addressed the purpose, which would be a different search term.
Boy, that'd be a good one, though.
There's a lot of good ones, aren't there?
I know.
There's an infinite number of good ones.
I know. So many questions.
That's one of the reasons why getting the tools in the hands of people that you can address your own search terms, and I implore people, trainees, to do that until they put it to the test on verifiable things as well as things of personal interest, and then turn your attention pretty fast to ideas of sanctuary from this cataclysm.
Understood. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Good morning. This is Tim over in Orlando.
Hi, Tim.
How you doing?
Well.
under the circumstances.
Yeah, other, you know, fine yeah. under the circumstances.
I sent you a fax some time back about how I'd gone to Sunspot National Solar Observatory
right.
last summer, and how those people over there were getting a little bit on edge about the way the Earth or the Sun has been acting.
Right.
So it kind of blends into what Major Dames is saying here. But also, what I was going to say, too, was there's a couple of Marian prophecies coming out of Bosnia.
Right.
That say, number one, that there would be an event which allows everyone to see each other or see ourselves as God sees us, so to speak. We would be able to see ourselves truly as we are. Mm. And that was kind of like a precursor to when Our Lady describes it as being fire falling from the sky afterwards. So there's a kind of synchronicity to these prophecies and what Major James is saying here.
Dames
is what I meant.
D-A-M-E-S. Yes, okay, thank you. He's really saying exactly what I said a little while ago. You don't rule out the concurrence of a religious event. In other words, I always thought, I mean, there are great arguments that go on about whether we were created or whether we are here through a process of evolution that began with lightning striking some sort of soup. The two could easily go together, that lightning bolt hit the soup the way it did because a creator had it do that. And so an event of the kind you are describing cannot be ruled out as a religious event, can it?
No, I agree. I agree 100% with you, Art. You're preaching to the choir.
All right. Yeah, exactly. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Where are you, please?
I'm in Tennessee. Hello, Mr. Bell and Mr. Dames.
Hi.
I'm a caver, and you was talking about the quality of oxygen at sea level.
Yes.
And was that the enrichment of oxygen, like the quality of it, or the just the, you know, pollutants in the air?
No, it was the existence of it, because it appears to burn off at higher levels in this second event.
Okay, and what I'd like to say is that with caves, excuse me, I'm a little bit nervous on the air.
That's right.
But in caves, everybody knows that caves have an occurrence of forcing air in and out. Would that be any benefit, an enrichment of oxygen, since it would have that forcing action to it?
Hmm.
Yeah, as a spelunker, you should also know that there are areas that if you do not have a second hole in the cave, you don't have that chimney effect, so there is no flow of air. It's just, it becomes stagnant and stale. My point is simply that the air at higher altitudes, a lot of the oxygen will be burned up somehow. I use burned up loosely. All we know is that the caves at the lower levels near sea level, especially for the long term, are where the survivors are. They're not surviving in caves that are higher, and they're not surviving because the oxygen isn't there. And we think that even in the precursor event, there'll be a little bit for reasons we don't understand. Maybe it does. Maybe for other physiological reasons, there'll be some deaths.
Ed, can you comment at all on the quality or apparent quality of life of the survivors?
It's pretty grim for a while, and a while may be up to 2 years before something very special happens.
So, see, that goes back to my comment about whether there would. How do you answer that? Obviously, I guess you want to be a survivor, but you probably wouldn't want to be around under such a condition.
Absolutely.
And I haven't really decided whether I'd want to be one of those or which I'd be. I'd probably head for a cave. I mean, who am I kidding? I probably would. I don't know that for sure.
Actually, the will to survive is pretty high. I think if it were not for Project Starman, I would probably just live this last year. If our data is correct in terms of temporally term, I'd party down for this last year and
run the old credit cards right up to the limit.
Yeah, something like that. You know, say, you know, be close to my family and those kinds of things for a while, and then check out with everybody else. But because of Project Starman, I feel that it's another career and a responsibility. And
after the top of the hour, and we will describe Project Starman. Now, in totality, this is going to be a 4-hour program with the hour that is yet to come up. If you would like to order this program in its entirety, the 4 hours, you can begin calling now. The number is 1-800-917-4278. They'll whiz it out to you. This or any other program we have done with a guest. I'm trying to remember to say this now. Beginning right this minute, you can call 1-800-917-4278 to get the technical remote viewing tapes. You can call 1-800-556-0391. That's 1-800-556-0391. They tell you how to remote view. Or from Canada and Alaska, you call 1-888-878-0333. 1-888-878-0333. I'm Art Bell.
Hi, this
and I'm Art Bell, live on AM 1500 KSTP.
An encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
The clear voice of the wind, the music of our universe, the supreme guidance of a higher being. So many of life's very best lessons await Coastic Theology. This non-secular, accredited distance learning college offers programs to help you be healthier in mind, body, and spirit through theological teachings in holistic health and healing, humanity, and philosophy. Broaden your knowledge to help others while you learn the business of practicing as a holistic health counselor. The legal, administrative, and marketing aspects, as well as the helping aspects. Through self-paced, independent home study or doctoral degree in mind-expanding disciplines, including divinity, metaphysics, naturology, parapsychic science, and more. Awaken the spirit within. For a free catalog, call 1-800-949-HEAL. That's 1-800-949-4325. American Institute of Holistic Theology is accredited by the American Association of Drugless Practitioners Certification and Accreditation Board. For more information, call 1-800-949-HEAL.
East of the Rockies, west of the Rockies, wherever you are in the vast and growing world of Art Bell listeners, you may sometimes miss one of Art's scintillating. You don't have time or don't have the computer to download those amazing photos that Art puts up on his website. But even if you can't listen to every word on the air or visit the website regularly, you don't have to let those hot topics and interviews get away. You'll find many of them in the brisk and readable Art Bell After Dark, the official Art Bell monthly newsletter. Read more about Art himself, more about his guests and their fascinating topics, and Art's own column of commentary. Subscribe today by calling Art Bell After Dark at 1-800-917-4278 to receive the handsome and stimulating subscriptions to the Art Bell newsletter, 744 East Pine Street, Central Point, Oregon, 97502. It's yours in print, Art Bell.
A couple of faxed questions that I think are pretty interesting. From somebody named Cubed, there's a name for you, a question. Is it possible that the solar event that missed the Earth a few months ago could have been the precursor Ed was talking about?
I had considered that, Art, and I think that it's possible. I think that the precursor event, I'm not positive about this. I had given it a lot of thought. But we're more concerned with the kill shot is in 99.
Right.
It could have been. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but the timing of that is referenced against the warning shot, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We think, we're pretty sure that December
is a ballpark figure for a precursor. We've got indicators that December is as early as December, next month. Actually,
you're gonna be flying to your new location, Ed?
Yes.
Well, one thing's for sure. You don't want to be at 40 or 50,000 feet even during the precursor, in my way of thinking.
Well, if it's a light event, the pilots might be blinded, and that would be a bad thing. If it's a radiation event, okay.
Dear Art, just a thought. You know, God promised Noah that he would never again cleanse the earth with water. Next time, it'll be by fire. From Pekin, Illinois, so I guess he's agreeing with you. Ed, what about the animals? Is there anything we can do to save them from Huntington Beach, California, comes a question. Is it possible, does he see any future at all for the animals, which will be above ground?
Too much to worry about, Art. You know, it's our own hides when it comes down to this kind of thing. And possibilities extend to, you know, what I'm doing tonight and taking care of my own family. And I guess, you know, I'm looking at my cat right now, and I hope I can save him. I don't know.
You once told us all that you viewed Christ, once went back and viewed the event of Christ on Earth, and that that was a common target for remote viewers, and that indeed Christ had been on Earth. Sherwood, Oregon, John asks, I think you better ask Ed if he's viewed Christ's second coming. If not, then I sure hope he does soon.
No, we have not. And that doesn't give you a person. It gives you ideas, abstract ideas associated with that targeting cue. The target the correct target in cue is Jesus of Nazareth. That gives you the man who was real. And we have not looked at an idea nor explored the idea of a second coming.
All right.
I'm a very spiritual man, and Christ is a very powerful figure in my mind, but I have never, as a remote viewer, explored the idea of the second coming.
Okay. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hi, my name is Michelle. I'm calling from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Basically, I just wanted to thank you for disseminating on the news that doesn't make the news. Listen to you all over here in Portland. I tell all my friends, and even my mom listens to you religiously. It's great. I have a question for Ed. I was wondering if he could elaborate on the beginning of technical remote viewing, how it started, and what was the process for screening students, and how young were they, and what happened to some of those students if they were in some...
I'll talk about the beginnings of it in the military, of course. Do you want to elaborate on that? And the interesting question there for me was... the students that didn't work out.
It began as a discovery by Ingo Swann, one of the West's greatest natural psychics, and that breakthrough discovery was coordinate remote viewing, CRV structure, in 1983, late 82, 83. It took him many years to develop it, but that was the breakthrough. That, in fact, I took that from him, took it into the deep, dark world of intelligence, began to work out the bug so it could be militarily useful. In 1989, 2 years prior to retirement, I founded SciTech and began to develop the techniques, civilianize the techniques, and improve them until now they can be taught on videotape. Very powerful techniques, and they're self-correcting. But there have been individuals that could not be trained. There were two of the females that went into the CIA Stargate program. They failed my remote viewing course in the military. And we have had two commercial students out of a 10-day commercial course that we just finished teaching fail. One because he was mentally imbalanced, and the other because she refused to stop smoking marijuana, and she couldn't focus. She would go into a stream of consciousness type of thing.
Very interesting. All right, Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, good morning. This is Dan in Virginia.
Yes, sir.
I have about 3 points I'd like to hit on real fast. Ed, usually things happen in threes. You've mentioned two, like, you know, the solar flare, the plant pathogen, and heavy viewed.
We haven't picked up anything like that, although I'm not writing off the possibility of something of asteroid or larger size being directed at the sun in order to cause the event that I'm describing.
Why not throw in an asteroid?
Yeah. Anyway, we got everything else happening.
I mean, you've got to direct that event somehow. And it is just the grand mind in the universe, the mind of God, if you will, saying, do this now. That's one thing. But if it has to be a mechanical, physical event, then you're going to have to do something to induce that kind of a flare and induce it correctly. So, my postulate would be throwing a big rock at a certain spot and causing a splash that goes in a certain direction towards us.
All right. The next point I wanted to ask you about, there's actually two. They're interrelated. The crop circles. Maybe tied in the crop circles with any of the remote viewing. I remote viewed the crop circles to give sort of some backup with that. And then, of course, I assume... in your remote viewing experience that you've made some contact with the ETs, and that's why you're starting Project Stargate.
All right. All fair questions. Crop circles?
The company did a commercial contract for what was called the North American Center for Crop Circle Studies about 1992. And that's available on the Internet somewhere. And I'm not sure what the website address is, but that study is up there.
What did you basically conclude?
That the circles themselves are time markers, local time markers. They're made by intelligent either machines and or manned vehicles that are moving in and out of time.
Mm-hmm.
When they need to know where they are locally in time, they put a specific crop circle. Very specific one that's registered in a central registry that's placed purposely in perishable media, grain or something like that, that lasts only that particular day, is fresh only on that one day.
Mm.
And that is how these vehicles and others are moving in time, know where they are in time locally.
Okay.
In other words, if you move to the past and you come back, go ahead.
Okay, we've got somebody here on the East of the Rockies line. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi, where are you?
San Antonio.
San Antonio, Texas. All right.
Charlotte, I really appreciate your intelligence.
Well.
Fantastic.
Is that as in military intelligence?
Mine like a steel trap. When I ask Ed, would a lead-lined closet protect your food and water, or would a lead-lined room protect me?
Good question. Actually, good question. Lead lining, Ed?
Probably so. I don't know how thick, though. I think it's got to be pretty thick. And also, we need to know what type of radiation we're dealing with, and we don't yet. But lead is a pretty good way to go. I considered lead in the last couple of days myself.
You've been thinking about that yourself?
Yeah, I've actually been doing some research, and lead lining is, of course, used in research, in actual research.
Sure.
Researchers with radioactivity. So, but again, we don't know whether we're dealing with fast protons or gamma or X-rays and how much lead we need. So I don't have all the. I'd rather just go in order to second guess or suss out the science. I'd rather just look at what the survivors are doing through time.
Mm-hmm.
And do that.
Okay.
So that's a sure thing, and I'm not a gambler.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Yeah, hi, Ed. Major, this is the Rock Man. I don't know if you remember me, Art. I'm calling from Denver, Colorado.
Oh, you're going to cook.
Yeah, I don't live here. I live in Green Bay, but I'm taking a load of Christmas trees to Southern California. Ho, ho, ho.
What can we do for you, sir?
The reason I called is I had a vision, I should say actually yesterday night, and I've had visions like these before, and a premonition, if you will, about an event that I believe to occur within the next 8 days. I'm just taking a guess at it, because like remote viewing, when these visions come to me, they're real ambiguous.
All right, well, spit it out. What was your vision?
It's not good.
Well, okay. Tell us what it was.
Well, the vision implies an earth change. The reason when I say vision, I read sunsets. I don't know. This is not going to make a lot of sense to you.
Okay, well, vision, we'll just, instead of explaining it, vision will do it, and you see an event in the next 8 days. Now, that is the kind of thing you're talking about, Ed, right? People beginning to have visions, dreams, senses that something is imminent.
Particularly dreams.
Particularly dreams.
Because that's where unconscious can start rolling accurately. Of course, the dream picks up color and trash as it rolls along, but they all start the same way, with direct knowledge.
Mm-hmm. All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning, Art Bell.
Extinguish your radio for us.
Okay. Sorry about that.
It's all right.
I have questions and comments.
All right, where are you?
I'm in San Diego.
What are your questions?
Question is, and also I have a joke for you. My question is, what about underground missile silos?
Yeah, that would work fine.
It's actually a pretty intelligent comment. You can buy underground missile silos.
Yeah, there's a guy that bought one. Apparently, he bought the last one in town.
Damn.
And, yeah, he spent a pretty fortune, and I thought, my God, he's got the cream of the cream. He's got the best place to be.
Isn't it ironic that which would eliminate all life on Earth, possibly, or from which a missile would have come that would have been part of eliminating all life on Earth would be the one thing that might protect you.
And there's some of these still available. Apparently, they're not selling them. They only sold so many of them. And it's beautiful looking. I mean, he's got this thing. I mean, it's an underground complex. You wouldn't believe. I couldn't believe it when I saw this thing. I said, I'd like to have one. Another thing is, ironically, is probably he might survive because of the cement would be prisoners in prisons, ironically. Another thing I was wondering about, it seems to be, and I've seen this in a program somewhere, these ETs or whatever, and again, it's always seems to be, in this case, New Mexico. And I don't know what is in New Mexico, and I started thinking, well, what's in New Mexico? I have no idea. Caves, Carlsbad, caverns, I don't know what, but it seems like every time I turn around, people are flocking to Mexico. And
well, New Mexico also, by the way, was a thought of location for storage of nuclear materials along with Yucca Flats. They are, in fact, going to store some nuclear materials in New Mexico. So if you, I suppose, could get into that area where they were going to store these, but had not yet stored them, a very important point, you'd be in a pretty good place, right, Ed?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But don't forget, you're going to, if you survive the shot,
yeah,
you're going to still have to be tied in with a community in order to survive in the long term. Without a community, you're sunk. You're just as secure.
And so you're really still talking chlorella as a food supply?
No, it doesn't have to be chlorella. The chlorella will be one of the few things living on the planet that people can eat. You can you can take food stocks with you. A good thing to take would be stocks of algal stocks in addition to seeds, because you'll need to replant as soon as possible and be able to have enough to eat until the food grows again. But what I'm saying is community, Art. You know, unless you're with a community, your odds of survival in the long term are really low.
I would imagine the social structure of those who would survive would be very, very different. For example, the need to reproduce rapidly would lead to social, and we're supposed to be a monogamous society now. I wonder if we would be after such an event.
Not sure. I thought about it. I think you may be on to something, but I'm not sure.
Well, it would be one of the few reasons I could think of that you might want to survive. I mean, be an interesting time. All right, Ed, hold on. Major Ed Dames is my guest. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. One more time. Want a copy of this program? I bet you do. It's 1-800-917-4278. One more time. That's 1-800-917-4278. We'll be right back.
Is CBC. From the Kingdom of Nye. You're listening to the best of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. When you hear phone numbers, please do not call.
Listen, here's a Christmas gift that you, well, everybody knows somebody who's got everything, but one thing they probably don't have is a star. Now, Nicole Kidman has a star, Brooke Shields has a star, Alec Baldwin, Madonna has a star, as well as her new baby. I have a star. My wife has a star. And you can have a star, too. Actually have a star. As a matter of fact, last night I put up the framed star, a certificate, which is absolutely beautiful. It's gigantic. It's like, I don't know, 16 by 20 or something. And they give you a star map as well to show you where your star is. It's $45. And you really are getting a star. I mean, you call the International Star Registry, and I'll give you their number. They send a beautiful full-color parchment certificate of record, sky charts, and a very interesting book on astronomy. Now, so you know, your star, the one named for you, and remember, a star is a sun, right? Your star is entered in the registry's book and recorded with the U.S. Copyright Office, so it will be your star forever. I mean, imagine the fame, the possibilities. What if your star went supernova? Your name would be everywhere. But even if it doesn't, you've got a star, right? An entire star. So there you are. Call the International Star Registry at 1-800-282-3333. Not a real hard number. That's 1-800-282-3333. And for $45, you can give a star for Christmas.
What's
the NASA homepage. Coronal mass ejections. Sometimes energetic particles and magnetic storms are observed at Earth without any exceptional flare activity preceding them. But they may be associated with a different solar phenomenon observed in 1973 by telescopes aboard the U.S. Space Lab, Space Station Skylab. These are, quote, coronal mass ejections, end quote, CMEs, huge bubble-shaped disturbances rising above active sunspot regions, expanding as they rise. By the time the spacecraft had already found the cause of the flare-associated magnetic storms at Earth, it was the arrival of interplanetary shock fronts, making the front edge of expanding plasma clouds, which it was then believed arose in flares. Once CMEs were discovered, it seemed obvious that here were probably similar clouds at the start of their journey outwards from the sun. Some CMEs, get this now, come with flares, some don't. And many scientists nowadays feel that CMEs are more frequently associated than flares with the rapid release of magnetic energy on the sun. The real mystery, of course, is the release process itself. Now, quoting again from NASA, CMEs heading straight for the Earth are not easy to observe, because they are seen against the background of the bright sun. Nevertheless, instruments aboard the Solar Observatory, SOAO, launched in 1996, are able to do so and have been used since early 1997 in space weather prediction. Very, very interesting. In other words, you don't see the one that's going to get you, Ed.
Well,
except that we put a satellite up there specifically to look for them. Now, this brings on an obvious question. Do you think that they, the ever-present they, government, whoever, know that something may be up and specifically put a satellite up there for that reason?
No, I think that that 80% of that satellite's mission, and I'll link your listeners who are interested into the space weather site in the next 24 hours. I think that that 80% of that mission is just for scientific studies. Maybe 15 to 20% is funded by DOD so that they can protect, or we can protect our offensive and defensive systems.
Mm-hmm. Okay, back to the lines. First time caller line, you're on the air with Ed Dames. Good morning.
How you doing there?
Okay, where are you?
I'm in West Virginia. It's Casper.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I got one question for Major Ed Dames. According to one of your targetings, there was an extraterrestrial race on Mars that was supposed to be kind of a helpful group that you did like in 96 when you were on our bill. You remember that?
Yeah, that was work that was done, early work in conjunction with... the one who's been disowned, right, Ed?
That's correct, but there, to a certain extent, we did talk about a race on Mars, yes, in the past.
Okay. Could there be any intervention in this event? Or again, I guess you've answered it. You said no.
The event is not being used. There's not an intervention. The in the post-cataclysmic stages, there will be an infiltration.
Oh, great.
No, it is great.
Get them while they're down, kind of deal.
Well, it's there's a plan out there, a la Alienation. I mean, there's only so many of them. Let's hypothetically speak for a moment. Suppose there were just so many of them. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. No, go ahead.
Well, I have to be careful here. Actually, SciTech is a junior partner on the Starman project, and it's a very important project because it deals with new life as well as new life forms, and I don't want to place any of those in danger. I will be pretty ambiguous about this, Art.
Okay.
It does deal with other technologies, perhaps tachyon teleportation and things that are far above anything that we've ever seen in this last 12,000 years. And it does deal with the infiltration of another race.
You said this might be our last show. Is it possible we will squeeze one more in, or is it possible that from your new location, you've got to remember I'm as international as you can get, I can interview you from the other side of the world, no problem, that we might get a show in from your new location?
Our Vice President, Joni Dourif, who is in the chat room now with about a zillion other people, has asked me to do that, has said, will you do one more show from the new site?
Yeah.
And I'll announce where I'm at if I do that show. If we make it, I'll do that at that juncture.
Okay, that would be something. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Okay, where are you, sir?
I'm in San Diego on my way to Temecula.
Okay.
I'm losing my cell site. Real quickly, Major, whatever happened with the Philip Teller Kramer case, and have you ever remote viewed Bigfoot?
All right, Philip Teller Kramer.
Yeah, never remote viewed Bigfoot. The Kramer case, because of a family consideration, we left it alone. There were certain circumstances attendant with that disappearance and murder, by the way.
Yeah, enough said. I mean, you know, I understand the family.
Uh-huh.
Okay, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Hello, Major Dames.
Where are you, sir?
I'm in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Okay.
I was listening to your show the other night when you had Dr. Kaku on, and
yes,
spoke a little bit about the Class 1 and Class 2 and Class 3 type
civilizations.
Right. We're just getting on the doorstep. We're really not even on the doorstep now, but say, for instance, you couldn't get a lead-lined room or a bunch of car batteries or some blankets from x-ray labs at a hospital or something. I'm thinking, maybe I don't have any business asking this question.
No, it's a reasonable question. As a matter of fact, when you go to the dentist, we all know they protect your private parts and put this big lead line thing over you.
Well, I'm trying to protect a little bit more than that. I was on a bigger scale, like, you know, the harp thing they have up in Alaska? And you were talking about the weather mixes that they're...
Oh, I see where you're going, sir.
Can we... You know a lot about radio and noise and things like that. You know how they can black out some kind of noise with another kind of noise?
Sure.
Okay, can
it's called voice or noise cancellation.
Exactly. Well, can we sort of use that technology to beam some stuff up into harp?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Ed, nobody really knows for certain what they're doing with harp. We know what their stated goals are, but we don't really know what they're doing with harp. And one might imagine they feel they can excite the ionosphere and actually cause a tremendous effect from a relatively small signal. It's a billion watts. It's actually very big, but compared to the world, it's small. Compared to the ionosphere, it's small. And they can actually start a vibratory effect that would affect all of the ionosphere. And you've got to wonder if they're not looking towards some sort of event or protecting from or...
Yeah, I think an event like a missile launch on the part of another superpower that reached a certain height and got EMP'd. Got its communications and guidance system electronics knocked out. How about something like that?
Yeah, or I wonder if they actually might be able to in some way modify that which protects us from the sun's radiation.
No, it's not. That's not what the Department of Defense is tasked with doing.
Okay.
Not with U.S. tax dollars.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Ed. This is John up in Oregon.
Yes, sir.
Ed, a couple questions before I'd like to get right to it. First of all, I'd just like to say that I hope all people who are listening to this take you very seriously, because a lot of times when people put out this kind of stuff, people don't take them seriously, and that's a sad thing, because when this does happen, no one will be ready for it. But anyway, I'd like to talk a little bit about the specifics about the timing of the second event, the big one. And you say that's around 1999, correct?
Actually, he's much more specific than that. Ed?
We're thinking around April of 99. That's our best shot so far.
Okay. Yeah, the reason I was saying, because I put this same event that you have at 2002, and I was just kind of wondering... you know, how you came up with 99, you know, I mean, you know, quickly overview, how you came up with that, and if maybe you could be a little early by a year or two on that.
Okay, that's actually a really good question. In other words, how do you date these events, Ed?
We could be early. I'm just saying that the center of mass for all of our temporal hits is April 99. We date it by time is an abstract thing, so it doesn't work really well in remote viewing. Mind is outside of time, loosely speaking. We use what we call an orrery. An orrery is, physically, is about a 4-century-old device that depicts the relative positions of the heavenly bodies vis-a-vis Earth any given time of the day. It's a clockwork. We do have a little symbolic sketch that we do after we have very good sight contact. After about 45 minutes of work, where the remote viewer is bilocating, half of their conscious awareness is in the room and the other half is on the target. It's called bilocation.
Mm.
We sketch a little diagram, and we take up a position about 1 astronomical unit above the north pole of the sun, and looking down, we sketch the position of the Earth in its orbit, present time, and then the Earth in its orbit during the time of the event, the time where the target is picked up.
Well, that would seem a very specific way of dating.
It's pretty good. It gives us a good mean, a good average, that kind of a thing. And by doing that, April 99, around 99-ish, is one of the better figures that we've got.
Well, people are always bugging us for timelines, so this one's awfully specific. All right, first-time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning, where are you?
Hello, Art.
Yes, hello.
Yes, this is David from Sacramento.
Yes, sir.
I have some information on a chemical that would protect people from radiation poisoning that I'd like to share.
Sure.
Are you familiar with dimethyl sulfoxide, commonly known as DMSO?
Yes, I've heard of DMSO.
Okay, what most people don't know about it is it has radioprotective properties. And say, for example, if there was a nuclear blast, if you're in the epicenter, you're toast.
Yeah,
but if you're in the fallout area, you would be. You could take a tablespoon of this stuff a day and protect all your cells from radiation poisoning.
Well, that really, really is a good point, Ed. In fact, now that I recall, back to the days of nuclear war when we thought it was possible, not that it isn't now, there were things that you could take ahead of exposure to radiation that would help a great deal.
They're all placebos, aren't?
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's baloney, then.
Well, the Soviets thought they had something, and it was, you know, and DMSO was a part of it. But it, generally speaking, I won't say it's baloney, and I won't say it's completely a placebo. There may be some biochemistry behind it that that connects it with protection, but working side by side with the best DOD biochemist in the business, they said no.
100 feet of ground above you is better.
Yeah.
All right. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Yes, hi, Art and Ed. This is Frank in Seattle.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to bring to your attention that you had a guest on a while ago by the name of Charles Cagle.
You don't have to bring that to my attention.
Right, and I just thought I'd mention about, you know, he had said similar things to what Ed was saying.
I know.
And I thought I would, you know, bring that out. But I thought I'd also say, too, that Richard Hoagland, don't think agrees with this type of assessment as far as what would happen here as far as these sun, you know, causing these problems.
Well, we'll have a chance to ask Richard about that, but I would think that if what Ed suggests that did occur, that the effects could be as suggested. Now, of course, Richard will comment on that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Hello?
Hello. Extinguish your radio, please.
Okay, hold on, Art.
I'm holding. Now, everybody ought to be ready to do that. You have your radio by your phone, so you can turn it off right away. You don't want it on while you're on the air, or you'll be all confused and sound
Art?
Weird. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where are you?
I'm in Rapid City, South Dakota, and my name is Dee.
Hi, B.
Dee.
Oh, Dee. Okay. Like Sandra Dee.
Well, yeah.
All right.
I have a question for Ed Dames.
Shoot.
I know... it wouldn't be safe in California for all this kind of stuff. Would a person be safer being in South Dakota?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, now, wait a minute. Now, why? Because you were talking, Ed, about sea level?
I'm talking about South Dakota. There's a lot of those places in, that are not that high in South Dakota. And also, predominantly, when you do have survivors... going to be a Mad Max scenario for the most part. You don't want to be probably, especially in Southern California, during during that era. South Dakota, especially with a community of survivors, you'd be in a whole lot better shape.
Okay. I want to give you one more plug here. The technical remote viewing videotapes. And by the way, I've seen Module 1, and it is a superb production. I can tell my audience that much. Really is superb. And I know Module 2 is about to come out, and people who would like to do this and do their own remote viewing and find their own safe places, or just if you don't believe any of this and you just want to learn how to remote view, these will do it. You can get them by calling in the U.S., except for Canada and Alaska, 1-800-556-0391. That's 1-800-556-0391, or in Canada and Alaska, 1-888-878-0333. That's 1-888-878-0333, correct?
That's correct. And our website is www.trv-scitech.com.
All right. Anything else in the remaining very short time that we have that you want to tell everybody after this incredible night?
Well, I can only say that enjoy the next year and spend time with yourself and your loved ones, or find somebody to love, and
pray for guidance just before you go to sleep, and that should do it for you one way or another.
Okay.
I'll be around on the internet until it goes down, teaching, and that's where I'll be if somebody needs to find me.
And one way or the other, here or after you've moved, we'll do one more program at least.
Okay. It's a deal.
Okay, good. Ed, thank you very much.
Thanks, Art.
Take care. That's SciTech's Major Ed Dames. Yikes. So, I hope you observed my earlier warnings. Otherwise, if you're the kind of person who's overly concerned about this sort of thing, you're probably pretty much overly concerned right now. Okay. If you want to get a copy of this program, and I understand that many, 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 many are, and if the line is busy, continue to try calling tomorrow, you know, today, during the day, whatever, tonight, whatever, on and on. And this applies not only to this program, but to any program we do with a guest here on Coast. You can get it by calling 1-800-917-4278. And that's a number that's good 24 hours a day, including right now. Do you have a pencil? Do you have a paper? You've grabbed for it, I presume. Let me give you that number one more time. It's 1-800-917-4278 to obtain a copy of this program. Well, folks, that's it. I guess in more ways than one, huh? Keep a smile on that face. Tomorrow night, we are going to do kind of an update with Joyce Riley with regard to the Gulf War syndrome, particularly important in view of the fact that I think in the next 7 to 10 days, we're going to be mixing it up again from the high desert. Yeah, the high desert. I'm Art Bell. Good night.
If you've missed